I know, it's going to say.
Yeah, Aaron's coming later, but yeah.
I don't think John Stokes.
It just means I got more water.
We're short on time, and in my city, just I don't need to talk. They all know how they're on here.
But no more if they are.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of the Planning Commission. You see, we've got a little bit different roles. I'm going to be acting as chair. Chair Devenos is out tonight. We have another couple of commissioners that are missing. Aaron Lang will arrive shortly after 7. We have Commissioner Carlson here for a short time, and then they will overlap. And we did this in the interest of getting quorum for tonight, which is wonderful, so thank you very much. And we have Commissioner Hillhorst out tonight, and 2, 3, 4. Am I missing another name?
Commissioner Davidus.
And Chair Davidus, okay. Okay, so I'd like to ask for a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
I'd like to amend the agenda if I could, in recognition of what Vice Chairman Walter just mentioned. We're actually going to have a limited time where we have a quorum, where we have people here. So in that interest, I'd like to suggest that we take public comment until 7 o'clock rather than 7:30, and then we begin our study session, and following our study session, we have presentations from staff so that we can get as much done while we have as many commissioners here as possible.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not clear what you're asking, because it says public comment is supposed to go from 7 to 7:30.
And I'm suggesting we change that to 7 o'clock, and
okay.
And that we have public comment at the end as
okay.
well. So any comments that don't get in by 7 o'clock, we welcome at the end of the meeting.
Okay, and then you made a second change, which is?
That we begin our study session and then hear from staff.
I think those may be inextricably interwoven.
Yeah, they're interwoven. I'm just...
Okay.
So you, in your prerogative as a vice chair, can ask if any commissioners want to make a recommendation once the study session opens.
Okay.
I guess just one question. How important are staff comments leading into the study session?
Well, I believe the staff is bringing back information that's germane to the discussion that you're having tonight, so it's going to be a challenge to have that discussion and then put the staff comments at the end. I think the two have to go part and parcel with each other.
How much time does it add? To have it at the, I mean, how much time is it for staff?
I don't know. We'd have to ask the staff directly in terms of how much their initial presentation would be, or if they could parse it out so that involves more discussion with the Planning Commission threaded through. Let me ask you, where is the staff? Carol, Emil?
Briefly, our suggestion is we have several topics that you asked us to return with additional information. That information is in your packet materials, but we also supplemented that with some even more information in some slides and illustrations. So it would be helpful for us at each topic to be able to go through that information that you requested. We'll take a few minutes and then discuss that topic, close it, move to the next one if that's possible.
Okay, Ms. Helen, if I could ask you to, at the beginning, at each opening, just to, and you may already have planned this, what commissioner question is it answering, mm-hmm. so that we're all understanding that we're moving this along and the questions are being answered?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you.
So I would make a motion to approve the agenda with the First Amendment.
The First Amendment, yeah. For public comment to end at,
yes.
7 p.m. and then continue on at the end of the meeting.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So the motion passes. Okay, we're on a roll here. Communications from City Council. Mayor Stokes is not with us tonight. Is he going to be here? Do you know?
I am not sure. I have not heard whether or not,
okay.
he will be here tonight.
Well, if he does arrive, we will break to open for his comments.
Sure.
Is there anyone here from any community council? Okay. Then I think we go to staff.
And I don't have a staff report for you tonight.
Beautiful.
Excellent.
I do want to show you something later on, but I'll dispense with that until later on in the agenda.
Okay. So we will move forward with public comment. We have 14 people signed up. And so if you can keep your comments brief, we are going to limit them to 3 minutes because we have had a public hearing on the downtown livability. If you can keep your comments brief so that we could perhaps get all 14 people in within the half hour. We don't have a half hour. Within
20 minutes.
Let's just do the best we can. Okay? So the first person on the list is...
Recommendation. Yes. Maybe mix it up with community and business, like developers.
Yeah.
So it's not...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the list has actually accomplished that.
Oh, sweet.
So the first person... But thank you for the recommendation. Mike LaTorre. I may be mispronouncing the name.
Pronounced it perfectly.
Excellent.
Where do I go?
Right here. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
My name is Mike LaTorre, and I'm on the board of the Bellevue Towers Condominium Association. I live at 500 106th Avenue Northeast, Unit 611, and I'm speaking on behalf of the board. Bellevue Towers consists of 539 units and two towers located 106th Avenue Northeast and Northeast 4th Street within the DT01 district. Our residents will all be impacted in some way or another in any changes to land use code, so we all are very active and interested and involved in following this process. We appreciate all the work that has been done by all those involved, but it must be said that after reviewing all the multiple studies, reports, and hearings, it is not an easy task for myself or any of the residents to comprehend or disseminate to others a lot of the data in the various reports. I was going to touch on traffic, parking, and safety, height and spacing, and amenities and incentives, but I was planning on a little more time than just the 3 minutes, so I'm going to cut into that. I'm going to skip right to height and spacing. One of the goals of the Livability Initiative was to promote open space and light in effect by building taller, skinnier buildings. The proposed changes do not translate into skinnier buildings, just taller buildings. This is especially true if the currently proposed 40-foot setbacks, 80-foot tower separations, and 10% floor plate reductions are removed. To address open space and light, these should not be removed. Maximum building heights need to be true maximums. There should be no trade-off to allow exceeding those maximums. Specifically, in DT02 District South, the 250-foot maximum height specified for that district in the current LUC is not the maximum. There are footnotes and appendices that allow 15% additional height for amenities and another 15 foot for roof equipment and enclosures totaling 52 feet, making the true maximum height 302 feet. Many Bellevue residents purchase south-facing units at a premium based on the current 250 height maximum. The proposal to raise the maximum height to 365 would negatively impact the views and values for most more BT residents. This isn't a matter of protecting views. This has to do with making sound decisions at the time based on actual data at that time. To change the parameters after that fact, you need well-thought-out and explainable justification as to why. We cannot find that in any of the studies or reports on why that should occur. Height limits should be maintained as written for the core of downtown in one and two districts. Let's talk about amenities. The current amenity incentive system should be simplified by the listing of very specific community needs and not what is incorporated into the design of a new building. The various reports stipulate 23 specific amenities. If you read over that list, each amenity can be interpreted in many ways with sometimes very little community benefit. Amenities must be more specific and defined to contribute to the community. Amenities built into the design of proposed buildings should be eliminated. Their value is more for marketing the building rather than to the benefits of the community. What amenities that are agreed upon must be clearly defined to ensure community benefits and meets the benefit at the end of the project.
And thank you very much for your comments. And
we can't really, I appreciate that so much, but it would make it very confusing if we did a lot of that. So
thank you.
Thank you very much. The next people are there. It's a couple, I imagine, a married couple. Lou and Nicole Merkies or Marys?
We didn't know what we were signing.
Oh, okay. and then the next person is Kevin Whitaker.
But we'll give it to the Bellevue Tower guy. Oh, good. Here's
Hey, how you guys doing? My name is Kevin Whitaker. I live at 10700 Northeast 4th Street, Unit 2802. That's Bellevue Towers. He touched it. That was very well said. He touched on a lot of the same stuff that I was going to say. I think what I maybe wanted to also bring to your attention is that there's a lot of people that are frustrated, like residents downtown, I think, because of the opacity of this process and because of the opacity of the regulations and governing documents that are defining all these rules in downtown. And like he also said, people try to do their due diligence, myself included, when they moved into downtown, and there was a certain assumption based off of what they could find in those regulations, especially with respect to height and building setbacks and things like that, that very directly affect their investment and what they're in their homes and in the place they want to live. And so this process, I think, has frustrated people and kind of created a cynicism as to what's really going on here, because there's so much very dense data that a layperson is not going to be able to really dig into and understand that is being used as justification for something that seems like a wealth transfer to a lot of people that are down here just trying to live their lives in a home that they bought, like I said, with assumptions based off of somewhat misleading data based off of what a normal person could figure out looking at those regulations. So I think my point is just understand why people are coming in here and making statements and trying to bring this to your attention, is that we feel like the rug's getting yanked out from underneath us by this process and by what we see as maybe other interests trying to take advantage of our lack of sophistication in this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker.
Can I direct a question to staff real quickly?
Yes.
Am I guessing correctly?
You're okay. Guessing correctly. We have a question on the floor.
I was going to direct this question to staff. I can actually direct it to you too, Jack.
No.
and that is, if the city changes its height rules, could people who had purchased a unit under the old, in an apartment high-rise, under the old rules, would they have a claim that there has been a taking if the rules are changed so that a building goes up in front of them and blocks their view?
No.
Okay. interesting follow-up, you know?
It's very clear. The answer is no.
Okay.
I mean, we can talk about it at greater length, but the, I mean, the regulatory takings, if you impose conditions on a project that prevent it from being used or that are out of proportion to an impact the project is creating, that can create a taking. But in terms of loss of value, which is really what you're getting at here, the courts have said that to create a taking, you have to really diminish a property's value by 85% or 90% in order to really be able to come in and argue.
Okay.
So, you know, downzoning a piece of property so that it can only be used for a park, for example, you know,
okay,
that could be a taking. But I will defer to...
No, they nodded as soon as you said no. So, okay, okay. Very good.
Good.
Okay.
So, Jack McCullough, 701 Fifth Avenue, Suite 6600, Seattle 98104. Just a couple of really quick comments tonight. You guys saw my letter, hopefully. You sent us off on a mission a few weeks ago, and Chair Davidos did with The Rock. And I'm sorry he's not here tonight. I'm really sorry because I had a special treat for him. We went off with staff on the height issue. And you asked us to work with it and resolve it, and we have resolved it. I think the language in the new footnote 12 language creates an opportunity to create to allow additional height in this limited circumstance in B2. It only applies in a couple locations in B2. It's not specific just to this site. But the other site, it's probably unlikely to be developed in the near future, redeveloped. Picking up on our conversation before. So we're here to say that I was going to bring The Rock back for Chair Davidos, and all I could come up with was this.
So it's smaller than the last one.
Yeah, exactly. We managed to take care of it. On the parking issue, we suggest that you just leave the 20% discount alone. I understand there may be some issues in Old Bellevue, but there aren't really in the rest of downtown on the discount for mixed-use projects. And to piecemeal this and to tinker with one part of the parking formula without the other, without the information in front of you, just seems like it's going to lead to results that you don't anticipate. And so let's come back and deal with that at once. And the final thing I was going to say is just want to thank staff. We missed you last week. The packet last week we had seen, we didn't think the changes in the ordinance really on tower spacing were consistent with the direction you'd given, because it actually, last week's packet had tower spacing between sites, between development sites, and your direction had been clear that it's within a development site from your April 19 meeting. But that's been cleared up in what's in front of you tonight. So we appreciate that. We think what's in front of you wraps up the direction you've given, but for the 60 versus 80 issue, and you will tackle that tonight. Good luck with that one. And thank you for all your efforts.
Thank you, Mr. McCullough. Next speaker is Arnie Hall.
Okay, you
whatever. Okay. Hi, good evening. Thank you. My name is Arnie Hall. I'm at 17227 Southeast 40th Place, Bellevue, Washington. Appreciate all your hard work following up on what Jack said. Here to talk about two important issues, I think, that remain. One is trigger height. You all made a very tough decision and agreed to raise the new base to 90% of the new max for the FAR. We strongly encourage you to be consistent with that trigger height and to set the new trigger heights at 90% of the new max heights. So there are no unintended consequences or advantages between properties in the downtown CBD. We believe, firsthand, developers contribute in many ways, including traffic impact fees, frontage improvements, on-site, off-site traffic mitigation, and the list goes on. We think that to make it even across the whole CBD is consistent with your decision on the base FARs, and so we hope that you'll take that strongly into consideration. The second is the parking reduction, and I agree with Jack. I think that the 20% reduction for mixed-use projects in the CBD has worked fine. I've been involved with a number. I think it is epidemic to Old Bellevue, and so maybe that parking code needs to address the challenges in that part of town. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Okay.
Next, we have Mr. Patrick Bannon.
Good evening, Vice Chair Walter, members of the Commission. My name is Patrick Bannon. I'm president of the Bellevue Downtown Association here in downtown Bellevue. And just three quick items for you. One is an issue that has come up a few times, and that is around usability and understanding of how to navigate the code, whether it's the existing code or the code update that we're envisioning. So a suggestion I would make is to provide direction to council in the transmittal to ensure that a very clear index and understandable guide to the new code is included in the land use code update. Secondly, the base height issue was mentioned, and I think the significant discrepancy left on the table is in the OLB. There the base height is at 26% of the new max, which leaves quite a distance of amenity need that has to be met compared to the other zones. So that one is really standing out as that central section of the OLB where the base height is 26% of the new max height that's proposed. And then finally, I've had the opportunity to have conversations with our members, with residents, with people who have been new to the process, have been with the process for a long time. And there appears to be some confusion about where new FAR has been proposed, additional FAR has been proposed. And consistent with the CAC, the process to date has continued to emphasize additional FAR density in the OLB stretch along 405. The commission, through presentation with a project, the Bellevue Gateway project, has looked at that Main Street and 112th Avenue Northeast parcel there on the corner for additional FAR. And then the CAC and commission have provided direction to look at matching the non-residential FAR with the residential FAR in the MU, so going from 3 to 5. Otherwise, the height changes that have been considered for downtown do not include additional density, at least not in the form of the chart. I know there's still consideration of an exemption of FAR for affordable housing if that is indeed pursued on in the land use code update, but I just wanted to provide some clarity that the recommendations that have come forward have not been a downtown-wide upzone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak tonight.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bannon. Okay, in the interest of going back and forth between sort of pro and con, we're going to skip to Bill Herman, and then after that we will have Brian Brand.
My name's Bill Herman. I'm with the group L for Bell, about 150 people who oppose the draft land use code. I want to talk about equalization.
Bill, could you quickly give us your address for the record?
10700 Northeast 4th Street.
Thank you.
I want to talk first about equalization, as it is bad for livability. It was very controversial in the CAC. They were kind of split among that. I recommend that you leave it out of your recommendation. The justification is to balance incentives to build between commercial and residential buildings in the MU. The FAR increase is a 100% increase. The FAR is now 3. It will go up to 6. There will, and everyone's going to earn those added bonuses. The proposed doubling of density is unjustified because we don't really want commercial traffic in the MU. The rush hour traffic is our biggest problem, and putting commercial traffic a half a mile away or more from the transit center is not the answer. We really would actually prefer that all that density be down in the OLB. And tall and skinny is better than squat and boxy for livability. If we take a look at what's done at the 425 Center, we can see they had the option of building at half the floor plate and twice the height and chose not to. And this is, we're going to hear about Philadelphia and Toronto and what's been done there, but all you have to do is travel 100 feet from my building and see that people do not want to build taller and skinnier unless you force them. I think that's what Commissioner Lang was talking about last week, and I sure hope that we do vote to remove all the additional height. Uh, Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Brian Brand, please.
Good evening, Vice Chair Walter and Commissioners. My name is Brian Brand, and I'm with Bayless Architects, and I'm also with the BDA. I'm the co-chair of our livability committee that's been following this process. And I've been involved in this code update and pushing for this code update for 13 years, way before it was actually approved by the council, and specifically in the last 4 years. But I'm here tonight to speak specifically about the questions from the commission and the community about taller buildings in the downtown core and the additional heights that are being proposed. The BDA wants to remind the commission why we've supported flexibility and height increases minus FAR or density increases. We feel that this will improve the design and livability benefits with slimmer towers. And so why is flexibility desired? We believe that this will create an opportunity for more creative design, slimmer towers. As has been pointed out, you can't increase the tower height without making the floor plate smaller. The FAR has not been proposed to be changed. We don't want it changed, except in the districts mentioned, OLB. When you make a building taller and you keep the FAR the same, you end up with a slimmer building. That benefits the city with more light and air into the city. It creates view corridors through the middle of the buildings. It allows for more spacing between towers. And it's really important, we think, that we create this creativity or this flexibility. And that was one of the things that the BDA was really pushing for with this code. The way the code is currently written, the FARs and the heights pretty well match. So if you want to build a max FAR building, you end up with a short, fat, squat building, which pretty much will block most any views through that site. And it also cuts out light and air. We support what the CAC recommendations are, and we really thank the commission and the staff for all their hard work. I think the staff has prepared exhibits to demonstrate the difference between a short squat building and a tall thin building, and I think you should ask them to present those exhibits again and remind yourself of why this will be of a benefit to the downtown. And anyway, thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Brand. And I think that puts us right at 7 o'clock straight up. Okay, Michelle Herman, would you like to speak?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Also, you had asked a question about the legal issue before. Before I start, would you like to hear another point of view?
Yeah, sure. It's your time. Use it the way you'd like. Yeah.
I was just going to respond to your question. I'm not going to dispute the response that you got before, but I would encourage you to broaden out your question. Given that there have been numerous concerns raised about the process here and the lack of ability for certain parts of the community to participate effectively, and given the number of objections that have been raised with regard to not only the proposed changes, but also the current code, I would suggest that the question that you ask be whether, if there is all of this upzoning and changes with the amenity system, is there a significant likelihood that some claim would be brought? That's just my suggestion.
Thank you. Michelle, could you state your name and address?
Yes, of course. Michelle Herman. I'm a Bellevue Towers resident, 10700 Northeast 4th Street. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to address you. I wanted to thank Patrick Bannon for reaching out to me a few weeks ago, too. He actually initiated what I thought was a good conversation about how residents and developers who appear to be completely opposed on all of the issues could maybe work better together going forward. And at first the thought was very difficult because, you know, as you have heard over and over again from residents, and especially through the written comments that have been submitted, residents are opposed to upzoning, are opposed to the amenity system, you know, are opposed to making changes without adequate studies and data. But it got me really thinking, is there some common ground? And I think there potentially is, and I just wanted to highlight that as something positive to think about. I think upzoning in the OLB district might be a good compromise area because, first of all, being close to transit and 405, we're not going to be bringing lots of additional traffic into the downtown corridor, which is one of the residents' biggest concerns. People are right there at 405. They'll be right there at transit. I think that having all these people, you know, we heard a couple weeks ago from the Crossroads residents that, you know, that notion of walking more than a half a mile to transit was just not tenable. But yet we're going to have a transit, a train station for people to walk to the core, like Lincoln and Bell Square and the properties, say, in the same area but north of 8th. We really expect them to walk 3/4 of a mile straight up the hill? They probably won't. They will just still drive there. We will still have a lot of traffic through there. So there's a number of really good reasons for us to consider upzoning only that OLB area, especially at first. You've also heard all the concerns about, well, gee, we're concerned about the amenity system, too. What if you just tried, you know, a staged approach and said, okay, let's try some upzoning in the OLB. Let's try the fixes to the amenity system and see what happens in the OLB before we do this to the entire downtown. And I just, again, I'm offering this in the, you know, in an effort to be somewhat constructive and find maybe a possible solution because we really do feel like there needs to be more studies. I think this adherence to the wedding cake design is just, it's a red herring. We don't have a wedding cake design, and there's no reason to adhere to it strictly and rigorously because this, we want to have a transition to the surrounding neighborhoods, but upzoning the OLB is not going to, you know, cause that pain there. And you're not going to block anybody's views. So with that, I'll just say thank you.
Great. Thank you. And we will have the rest of public comment later on in the evening. Okay. So now we will begin our study session.
Yes. Okay. So good evening, Vice Chair Walter and members of the Commission. Before you tonight, for the record, we have Emil King, Strategic Planning Manager in PCD. And to my left, we have...
Code Development Manager from DSD.
And to my right...
And Carol Helland, Code and Policy Director.
Okay. So tonight we wanted to continue the Commission's refinement of the public hearing draft of the land use code. In your packet, we included a reprint of all the materials from the May 3rd commission meeting that we had to reschedule for tonight, as well as what you'll see as attachment A is the consolidated code draft. And that code draft was intended to capture your initial direction to date following the March 8th public hearing. So we went through and basically amended the public hearing draft code with your changes that you've given us over the past few meetings. So that's going to continue to be the working document that will continue to incorporate your changes going through towards our May 24th goal of wrapping up your recommendation to council. So staff is here tonight to work through the topics that you see listed up there. And as the Planning Commission staff, Cohen, had mentioned, we do have some material that we're bringing back for each topical area. If you'd like us to go through that as an introductory, we want to keep it very to the point, concise, and allow as much time that the commission needs to come to a conclusion on these topics. Okay. So if you'd like, we can jump right into the downtown parking. Okay. So the downtown parking, you'll find the packet material for this is going to start on essentially
page
151 of your packet, attachment B1. The direction that we received from you on April 26th was two-part. The first part was to remove the flexibility that we had drafted up in the public hearing draft of the code to allow developers to come in and do a parking study to either go above or below the parking ratios in the code. So that was one point of direction. And then the second point was that you expressed a desire to have some more discussion about the current code provisions for the 20% shared parking provisions. So we can briefly give you some insights on both of those items if you'd like before you start your discussion.
I might just note very quickly that the consolidated code provisions that have been refined based on the Planning Commission initial direction to date start on page 66, and so they do revert back to the existing code as it is right now. We remove the code flexibility with respect to the modification, and the 20% right now, the only modification that was left to the shared parking 20% discount that some of the commenters spoke to earlier this evening is that now it's not an automatic discount, but in the consolidated code, a parking study is required. So that would be on page 68 of your consolidated code.
So the 20% reduction would require a study?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. That mechanism was added.
All right.
So there were some questions from commissioners about just the philosophy of shared parking. So we wanted to put in a simple graphic here that essentially showed, if you can imagine each one of those colors as a different type of land use all happening in a single development. And the basically on the bottom is time of day. So this is essentially showing that you can have overlapping businesses operating that all have different peak hours that they might be operating at, and that's the kind of the philosophy of doing shared parking. So you can see that the red land use there, its peak is in the morning. The mid-morning is when it needs most of its parking there by those arrows. The green at the top, it kind of has a constant peak up there from the mid-morning into the early evening. The blue, for most of the morning into the midday, it doesn't have very much parking demand, and then at night is where it really inflates. So this is a question we had about an example of why you would even consider shared parking.
Certainly, I'm actually, I think it was my question, and I'm actually satisfied if you did change the language so that a 20% reduction would have to be accompanied with a justification through a study. So my question has been answered. Does anybody else have any questions on this?
So that's how the consolidated code is printed right now, and that's on page 68.
Sorry. Okay. Do I need to take a motion on that we agree to that, or are we just good?
Does staff have any more presentation on this, the parking, or is this it?
Just
this is it.
Okay. May I?
Yes, please.
A couple of questions. My first question is, I've read from, I think it was the Wallace letter, and I've heard several people mention that this seems to be old Bellevue problem. To me, that sounds weird, and I was wondering why that is, because I would imagine that this is a code that's citywide, that this problem should be citywide, or maybe not in the transit-oriented development sections of the city. So can staff elaborate on why that would be the case?
Well, I think we would acknowledge that it seems like there are a number of kind of issues in Old Bellevue relating to parking that we've heard over the past number of years, and I think our experience in Old Bellevue is that there are parking issues in Old Bellevue. I think we have also heard from others where there are parts of the city that are becoming built out, that when they do have a lot of shared parking and it's not kind of operated and signed appropriately, there can be issues even using what parking is put there as a shared resource. So it's more so than just the amount of parking, but it's actually how it's managed and used by people.
Okay. Commissioner Carlson?
No, I think that Commissioner Morso has it exactly right. I don't think this is a problem that is exclusive to Old Bellevue. I think Old Bellevue is the canary in the coal mine. I think this is going to be a downtown-wide issue if we don't get a handle on the issue of parking. I'm still at a loss as to why we have this massive, impressive, wonderful expansion of Bellevue Park without a single additional parking place. What were they thinking? And you know, with the residential and the and commercial on Old Main trying to coincide, you see that this is just a collision that did not need to happen. And this is my ongoing concern, that we're going to see this popping up as a problem in more and more places throughout the city.
And I think in the interim, what the Planning Commission has requested is that in the recommendation, you will transmit to Council the request that the comprehensive parking study be undertaken soon. And it has been funded, so that is available, and we're starting to catalog ideas that the Planning Commission has put forward for recommending that are beyond the scope of the code necessarily that you'd like to recommend in your transmittal, and that would be one of them.
Commissioner Lang.
So I have just two kind of tweaks or things that got captured at one point and seem to have disappeared. One of them, I think that the shared parking provision needs to make it clear that it is for commercial, or I would actually phrase it as non-residential uses only, and number two, that you cannot use required visitor parking for as part of your shared residential visitor parking as part of your shared parking. Those two changes were in a prior draft, and they have somehow disappeared from this, and unless I'm, and you know, I've been schlepping around five different packets, but if I'm reading page 68 in the May 10th packet and I look at that, and I look also at provision, subsection H of that same section, which is the actual sort of how one goes about getting.
Commissioner Lang, if you want to quickly check page 153 of the packet, we had some language that was drafted up when we were talking about the parking reductions, that we could take that same language and apply it to what Carol had mentioned earlier. I'll let you look up that citation.
There hasn't been specific direction yet from the Planning Commission on that, but we're happy to transfer
page 153,
that.
The second to last paragraph.
I'd seen that there.
Okay,
and
we could take that same.
So, yeah, and I had actually thought that I guess I'm silly. I had thought that the new subsection 080H, which begins on page 153, would be the section that we would see in this draft. And so
That's with regard to the modification of the parking standards.
Right,
so,
but that is incorporated by reference in subsection C3A, and that's why it's important, right? So
if you'd like to actually recommend that we include that in the consolidated draft, we hadn't yet received Planning Commission initial direction.
Okay.
So
well,
would you like to make a motion?
I move that we incorporate the language in 2025A080H, starting on page 153 and continuing on page 154 of our May 10th packet into the review draft.
We don't even need a motion to do that, but we will move it.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Stephanie? Just learning as I go.
It's okay. The initial direction doesn't need
okay.
But we will move that into the consolidated draft.
Stephanie, Matt?
Yes.
I have another question for staff. Could staff help the commission understand further the logic for this concept? Because to me, it makes sense outside of several U's having the same peak hours to get that reduction. Was there any provision in the code that if you have several U's having the same peak hours, obviously we have a problem, then to mitigate that problem?
So actually, the code didn't provide that right now. It was an automatic 20% discount, and you didn't have to do a parking study. So the consolidated code, we added a parking study to ensure that the parking supply met the demand based on that peak usage requirement. So many jurisdictions just actually have minimum maxing parking standards like we do, and they impose just a 20% discount, assuming that it'll kind of sort out in the wash. It is anywhere between 20 and 30% with most jurisdictions. In other jurisdictions actually require a parking study to justify up to a 20% discount based on the kind of information that Emil showed in the slide, where you actually identify the peaks and ensure that the parking demand the supply will meet the demand. So that would be incorporated. That is incorporated into the consolidated code.
Mr. Lang.
So I apologize. I apologize again that I'm running late, but go Boys and Girls Club. I understand that this evening we are going to lose a commissioner here in about 10 minutes, and I also understand that we are all of this is the last meeting before we have what I'm going to consider the last draft that the commission looks at. And so before we lose Commissioner Carlson, I would ask if we might try to go through and move some more of, I guess, what Commissioner David also would call the big rocks, so that to the extent that we've got a bunch of people here, we can actually provide some more staff direction. If there's stuff, you know, at the end that we need to go back over or whatever, but I feel really like we've got this lump of clay we've been working on for 4 years. Let's get as much of the rest of that lump of clay in before we lose Commissioner Carlson, so that next meeting we've got the full lump.
Okay. Commissioner Lang, and I certainly appreciate that we need to do this. Do you have a recommendation for me in terms of how we go through what the staff has prepared? Can we sort through to where the issues are?
The topic list is on the screen right now.
Okay, so if we can, prioritize those. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Stephanie, before we do that, we've started the conversation on parking. Can you at least wrap that up? Because I think we get to a good position where we could probably wrap that up before moving on to deciding what big rocks we want to move forward. I feel like we're leaving this midway.
Did you still have an open item on parking that hasn't
I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. So are we moving forward with living on the recommendation that we have right now in the draft, that we all understand that we're going to leave the 20% parking reduction, but up to 20% of parking reduction, but that needs to be with a parking study. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
And we are adding the you can't discount for the visitor parking stalls, as Commissioner Lang indicated.
Or use non-residential parking towards your shared parking.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Morrison, for that clarification. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
You keep it up. Okay. So on the next six items, order that you'd like to see them?
So I have, if you'll indulge me for a moment, maybe a what I consider to be a quick way to maybe move some changes into the draft. These are not final, but move some changes into the draft so that what comes back 2 weeks from now is more of that lump of clay. I recognize that sort of topic-specific attachments are here, and they do inform some things. But we have also received some fairly detailed and, I thought, helpful comments from some stakeholders. And I would propose providing some direction on those sort of detailed recommendations from stakeholders to try to get some of that stuff into the draft. And then to the extent that those comments don't address or those stakeholder comments don't directly speak to these things, then we will go through these. Is that would that be acceptable?
It's tough to say since I don't know what those comments are.
Let me give an example.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Barnes.
So you have to leave in like 8 minutes?
Between 10 and 15 minutes, yes.
So I was gonna suggest that maybe we go with whatever. Did you have anything that you were...
Thank you.
All right.
Wow.
Carry on.
Okay. So...
But thank you.
There was a letter from Bob Wallace of Wallace Properties that was in our May 3rd packet, and it looks like we have kind of what I'm going to consider or call like a revised version of that letter tonight that is mercifully more succinct. Obviously, wasn't written by an attorney. And there are some very specific recommendations in here, which are, they go to, you know, they touch on a number of the topics. And again, this is our final draft is not tonight, but I'm just trying to move things forward so that we have stuff in front of us and we can look at it in writing at our last meeting on this. So I would make a motion to direct staff to incorporate the proposed changes in the Wallace Properties May 10th, 2017 letter to the Planning Commission, and those proposed changes are in the bold paragraph sections in the letter, and with the recognition that these are changes being incorporated into the draft, this is not our final recommendation, it's just to bring it back so we can look at this all together.
May I second?
Yes, please, Commissioner Moore.
I'm not sure I'm entirely comfortable with that because we need to have the conversation about floor plates, and part of the Wallace letter is referring to floor plates.
I agree. I'm just making a motion to generally accept these things, and we will look at what those changes look like in this and then go forward.
But I'm not sure I'm following you, Aaron, because some of the items on their list is up there as well. So what exactly are you proposing? Because we will be talking about these items.
I could very much go through them individually, if that would be better.
Yes, and where possible, if we can leverage the slides that the staff has put together for us, that would be... fantastic, so that we can have as many tools at our... Are you going to change stuff?
Is the goal to just add this to the... Like,
I just want to get things into the draft.
Yeah.
So that when, in an ideal world, all seven of us are back together for this meeting on the 24th, that we can go through and hit it with a scalpel. If we go through this, and with all due respect to staff, and you've prepared well, as always, and the rest of us, if we go through this in a linear fashion and have the same conversation that we've had about parking, we will be here until 11 o'clock tonight, and there will be no meaningful movement of rocks, large or small, going to that May 24th hearing draft. And so I'm very concerned about that.
Okay. And I do now see what you're saying.
Okay, now that I do see what you're saying, I definitely have an issue with it because the Wallace letter is asking for the fee new rate to be 25 from 28, and we need to talk about that. So I'm not comfortable asking staff to have that in the draft. The Wallace letter is asking for larger floor plate. I'm not comfortable with having staff moving forward and adding that onto the draft either. So I'm more comfortable with following this than just take the letter and move it into the draft.
Okay. Can we have a caveat? Can we discuss those two things that are important to Commissioner Morisseau? Move those two things. I like the idea of putting this all in the draft and having seven of us all together to fully discuss. I like that idea. But in respect for Ms. Morisseau's comments, which are well taken, can we talk about those two things, get to some clarity on those two things, and then move them into, move whatever the discussion comes to on those two things and move the rest of it forward?
So would that be considered sort of a friendly amendment to my motion then, Ms. Morso?
Am I allowed to make a friendly
Morso?
Amendment?
I'm just asking if Commissioner Morso would like to carve out those two items, then I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Ms. Morso? Commissioner
Morso? Yeah, I'm just checking because I'm looking at the Wallace letter and it's all up here that we're going to be talking about. So.
And again, this to clarify, Commissioner.
Well, we've already done one of them, which is the director's authority to modify required parking.
Right. And to clarify, Commissioner Lang, this doesn't commit us.
No.
This just basically encodes this for the next conversation.
But it is already part of the conversation because it's on the list of topics we're going to be talking about with staff tonight.
It's one thing, and there are other stakeholder comments and many, many, many things. So
okay,
I'm just trying to be efficient while we have.
If that's the case, if that's the logic, why not take all the stakeholder comments that we've received and add them to the draft? Why not just the Wallace letter?
I'm going through things in the order that they're sitting on my pile here.
Okay, at this point, is there anyone else who would like to put a friendly amendment to Commissioner Lang's motion? Then we can put it to a vote.
Well, I understand where you're going with this. I would second your motion on this.
Without an amendment. Okay.
But I'm also amenable to your amendment, if you'd like.
Any further discussion?
I've been at this for 4 years now. A lot of the people in this room have been at this for 4 years now. We're going to sit here tonight on our penultimate meeting to discuss this as a commission, and we're going to have the same conversations with minor variations of the same information that we've been discussing for 4 years. And what's going to happen is we're going to find ourselves on May 24th as a commission having run ourselves out of time to make recommendations and try to do something meaningful on the 24th without having meaningfully moved the draft forward, in my mind, really in months. And I know that's not a stirring speech in favor of my motion, but
okay.
I'd like to move things forward, and I'd like to take advantage of having five of us here before we have four of us, and who knows, maybe we end up with three of us here, and then we're unable to continue with the meeting.
Right.
So,
okay, is there any way to pull this aside, say we will discuss everything here, it will all go in as, to the draft code for the 24th, and then as we continue to talk, any new things that we talk about that get done before the end of the meeting, those things can be adjusted. Did I lose you?
Anything can be adjusted on the 24th. We'll have the benefit.
But could it go into the draft of the 24th so that we can take advantage? Because
yes.
You're not, what I'm sort of hearing is we put it all in the draft and we come back on the 24th. And I don't think that that is necessarily a productive use of our time. So we could continue to talk, and then we.
Well, as I see it, we have talked about most of these topics for quite some time. Some of us for years, and we're very familiar with the discussion and the demarcation points and whatnot, and the direction laid out here in the Wallace memo, I think, is the direction that I think we should go in. And if Commissioner Morso is not comfortable with a couple of these subject areas, she wants more discussion,
then let's carve them out and talk about those separately. But if she's comfortable with the rest, then by all means, let's move forward on this. Be nice to get something done.
So are you offering that as a friendly amendment?
Is somebody tracking the friendly amendments?
Well, I'll second your motion.
Okay. So at this point, is there any more discussion?
Staff can highlight these as noting where they came from, the source of the amendments, the changes in the draft.
That's a great suggestion.
It's a request.
What is the request,
sure,
Jeremy?
We can do that because we did that on this draft, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
That's awesome.
What is the request, Jeremy?
To note, so if we do incorporate it into the draft, note the source of it so that we can at least trace it back.
We would do it in the comment bubble, the comment bubble, just the same as we've done the others.
Good idea. Suggestion. Good.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. I'd like to take a vote on the motion that's on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I oppose.
Okay. Thank you. Now, in the April 26th packet, and I wasn't kidding when I said I literally am grabbing stacks of paper and just going through these things. I have three of them. The second thing I have in my packet here is a May 10th, 2017 letter from PMF Investments. And as I read it, there is a suggestion in subsection one, if you will, titled Support Technology Drop Growths, but there's an actual recommendation on the floor plates on the second page. And with the same caveat as before, which is this is merely to put it in the draft, annotate it, if you will, as Commissioner Barksdale has recommended, so that we know the source of it when we see it again for the next meeting. I would just move that we direct staff to incorporate that recommended change into the next draft with an annotation about the source of the change. That's my motion.
Could you clarify what the numbers are just so that I can write them down?
It states, we ask that the code be amended to allow floor plates only in the OLB South Zone between 80 to 150 feet to be increased by 25%, parentheses, up to 25,000 square feet, close parentheses, subject to the exact same standards of tower separation, light, air impacts, as proposed in the current staff recommendation. So I think that it's kind of a very discreet change there.
Okay. And it's the May 10th letter, right?
And that is the May 10th letter.
So. I'll second that motion as well.
Okay. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
Now, I was going to continue with this, but the next thing in the packet, and I think some of you are aware, I have certainly made legal counsel aware, but I will not take part in any discussion of the Elan Fortress project. Some folks in the room already know this, but during my tenure as the co-chair of the Citizen Advisory Committee, I was contacted on a few occasions, and I don't believe with any bad intent, but by representatives of the property owner, and asking me in my professional capacity as a land use attorney to maybe assist with the rezone of the property. I recognize that the proposal that is before us and has been discussed is not something that I ever had a substantive conversation about. However, I disclosed those communications to the city attorney and to the city's ethics officer a little over a year ago, and have made a decision that I will not participate in any way in discussing anything that involves the Elan Fortress property or their proposal. So I won't be doing that, and...
I think at this point they've come to the table and said they're satisfied with the information that's in the packet right now.
All right. Well, that makes that easier.
So you're saying they had to settle on Jack McCullough?
Mm-hmm. I know. They took brains over looks. No. Sorry, Jack. But at this point in my career, I'd take brains over. Anyway. And I believe... I guess the final thing... I'll just leave well enough alone. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lang.
Is that it?
That's it.
Anyone else have a...
Because we would still have quorum without you, right?
What's that?
We would still have quorum. Okay.
So we still have quorum.
This won't be as much fun.
Commissioner Lang, where does this leave us?
Well, I think we're done. Let's,
yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Carlson, for staying.
Well, maybe that's a good segue to get into the land fortress and get that move forward, because I think that's a big rock now, because staff has worked with them. There seems to be a solution on the floor that this could probably move forward.
And one more, the amenity incentive system. There are a couple of ideas that staff brought that mm-hmm. would be nice to cover.
Okay.
There are some things that might not be addressed on each of those letters that we could go through and just identify.
They don't have a form right now?
That's fine. As long as they're not permanently gone.
Okay, at this point, Commissioner Lang, I would like a coach to come and sit by me, please. I'm asking you.
Oh, I can't,
sir?
I can't pick one.
Vice Chair Walter, I could offer up that though the... excuse me, the Bob Wallace letter and PMF letter do cover a lot of items, and we've read through these before, so we kind of understand all the elements. There are some other parts of these topics that if you do want to look at those for follow-up and have any additional changes to the draft code, you're more than welcome to do that.
Okay. So I don't have as strong handle on these letters as Commissioner Lang does, so I'm going to ask for him to give me some guidance on what isn't in there, what we can talk about.
No.
No, I'm not. Oh, sorry. I thought you were saying no, I couldn't do that.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Great meeting so far.
Yeah.
Okay. So, at issue now is, so we've put the amenity of incentive in here.
So perhaps one way to walk through these is to go to each of the topic areas. For instance, I think Commissioner Barksdale suggested amenity incentive system. We could start with that attachment, which is on page 155, and we do describe the initial Planning Commission direction that we've received. We could just tick down that list quickly and see if there are any suggestions that haven't been addressed by the letters to our, the best of our ability.
Certainly.
I would say that at the most recent meeting, the two items that you wanted to have additional follow-up on were the list of bonusable amenities. Bob Wallace's letter covers about half of those. His letter had the rooftop, roof gardens, residential amenity space, landscaping. There were other ideas that were brought up there, so if the commission would like any additional things added to the incentive system, those are the breadth of ones that were suggested. And two commissioners wanted to have a short discussion on the periodic review cycle, whether it be 7 or 10 years, and how to incorporate any adaptive management techniques. So I know Commissioner Barksdale wanted to talk briefly about that as well.
Okay. So let's begin with the list of bonusable amenities. Open it to the floor. In terms of the list that we have in the overheads or right here.
The commission asked what new things were suggested. I think Commissioner Hillhorst had asked that. This is what the new things that were suggested. Bob Wallace has five of those were his ideas, so based on the earlier direction from tonight, we'll be including five of those on the list. And if you'd like to see the current status of the list, that's what it looks like. So that's what you have now. You've added five more things. If you'd like to add any additional ones.
The ones that were added in the Bob Wallace letter would include publicly accessible rooftops or amenity spaces on roofs, podium or tower structures, roof gardens, residential amenity space, and landscaping.
Okay.
What's the likelihood that the market will take care of many of, like, some of these? Can you assess, just running down this list?
It appears a few of those would be incorporated into a development and may not need an incentive to have it happen.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of...
We see pretty commonly, and we see residential amenity space pretty commonly that's just for the residents, for instance, so exercise rooms, pools, things like that, that aren't a public benefit necessarily.
Yeah, so I would opt to not have those as part of the amenity system.
You would, I'm sorry?
Opt to not have those as part of the amenity incentive system.
Okay, well, if we're not hearing any more...
I'm getting some clarification here. So do any commissioners have strong feelings about adding... Okay. So I was asking Commissioner Lang for clarification on the mid-block pedestrian crossings versus through-block connections. So the mid-block crossings cross the street?
That's correct. And those are installed by the Transportation Department.
Okay. And that's something that's new?
We have...
those were identified in the comprehensive plan when the update was adopted.
Yeah, we probably have close to a dozen of them.
Okay, so let's just start over. I thought this was a list of new things newly added that aren't currently on the amenities list. Are these things that are put in more as mandates that then are they'd like to turn into amenities? Because there's things here I've seen before, like the through-block connections. Correct. So are there others that we're shifting from... maybe mandate isn't the right word, but...
Requirements. Some are currently requirements, and they are being asked to be included as bonusable amenities. So things that fall into that category would be through-block connections, and that would be the only thing that would be a requirement that is being asked to now receive an amenity bonus.
And what would be a definition of residential amenity space?
That would be something like an exercise room or a swimming pool or meeting rooms that are just for the benefit of the residents who live in the building and not publicly accessible.
Okay.
So I was just proposing if it's something that the market will take care of and it doesn't provide a public benefit, that we don't make it a part of the amenity incentive
system. Right. And do you think that residential amenity space is that?
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
That's what I think it is.
To differentiate, for instance, Bob Wallace's letter notes publicly accessible rooftops or amenity spaces. So, for instance, on the top of the Center 425 building, there's a publicly accessible space. Mm-hmm. And the interest in that letter is having that accessed, that bonused, as opposed to a residential amenity space.
Okay. So let's put it out. Is there anything on this list that any commissioner believes needs to be added, with the exception of what's already gone in via Bob Wallace's letter to the May 24th packet?
May I?
Yes.
If there's something that's already a requirement, there's a reason it's a requirement. If anything, we've heard from the public and the stakeholders, they're asking us to get rid of the amenity incentive system and make what needs to be a requirement. So if it's already a requirement, leave it as that. Why add it to the amenity incentive system?
We're not making that suggestion. as part of the initial discussion the Planning Commission had, they were asking whether the amenities that are currently in the consolidated code are too many or too few, and whether some should be added. Right now, the amenities, for reference, I think Emil had those up on the board earlier, but they also start on in your packet materials at page 161.
So, Carol, what I'm saying, if something is a requirement, my personal recommendation is to leave it as that.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's to Commissioner Bugsdale's point, if it's something that the market is going to take care of itself, there's no need to add it to the list, because we already have an extensive mm-hmm. list.
Okay. Staff would agree with you.
Okay. Commissioner Lang, do you have anything from this list?
No, the only thing I'd just like to remind everybody is that, at least as the draft is now, there's 10% of your FAR that you still want to have an opportunity to earn. So when we start talking about getting rid of the amenity incentive system, what we're saying is just give everybody whatever the max FAR is, and then we require things. Well, then we can spend a while deciding what we have to require. So I would just suggest that this approach to talking about what should and shouldn't be on the list should be the focus at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So where is it?
So the question at this point is, we have the amenities that start on a page 161. I think those are consistent with the amenity principles that the council and the Planning Commission discussed in their joint meeting that was held last year. And those are reflected in the consolidated draft. The question before you is whether the amenities that were suggested by Mr. Wallace on page 206 of your packet should be added, or if any of the amenities that Emil had up on the screen should be added. So first, let's take the ones on 206. Should any of the ones that are on 206 be added to the amenity chart? They're in the middle of the page.
Scrolling.
Is there any thoughts? I'm not hearing anybody say let's add.
I'm just rolling.
Oh, you're okay. Getting there?
So I just want to point out that, for context, what is being suggested in the Wallace letter is a way of allowing small lots an opportunity to actually earn that 10%, because when you already have a small lot, and here the proposed threshold, I think, is, and I think we've kind of at least now put that in the draft, 40,000 square feet, which is just shy of an acre. You can't start putting a bunch of ground-level amenity space in, because you already don't have that much room. So what I think what is being proposed here are specifically bonuses for, and I'll just read it, viable bonuses for residential buildings on small lots. And, well, I believe that Commissioner Barksdale's point about, like, interior residential amenity space probably not being like a public benefit, sort of bonusable. You start thinking about like a small thing, like you don't have much space, so having rooftop spaces, having these types of things, it's really kind of the only other place you've got to go if you're starting to provide some open space, if you will. So I would say, four of the five, other than the interior residential amenity space, I could make an argument that the other four are a benefit.
Okay. Would you like it to? We could draft that up as it's suggested for only for small lots, if that would be something you'd like to look at.
Okay. And then I have a question. What difference is that than the flexible amenity? Could the flexible amenity not be created for a small lot?
Well, I think the phrase flexible amenity is a standalone thing, and I think what any property owner or developer is going to look for is, like, what's on the menu that I know I can order, and then, the flexible amenity is sort of like, what's in the box?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Because I think I saw your hand.
Actually, Stephanie asked the question that I was going to ask, but I'd like to get an answer from staff. wouldn't the flexible amenity take care of that?
The flexible amenity, as written, says if it's not on the current list, you can go
you
through
can
a process.
You can go through the process and get it, right?
Not on it, but I think, while that's the case, I would tend to agree with Aaron that I think it has been viewed historically mm-hmm. as something larger and grandiose that wasn't on the list. But I guess it could be clear that it could be a number of small things as well.
So it's the surety that this will be allowed versus not. So it's okay.
As a essentially as a departure for small sites.
Okay.
So we have all the things on the screen because they were suggested during the public hearing
right.
as new ideas.
Right.
Mr. Wallace's ideas morphed a little bit from just new ideas versus applying just to the small lot. So it would be good to get clarification from the commission if these ideas on page 206 should just be for small lots or for anyone, any project mm-hmm. to use, or if your other option is to move forward with things just going after the flexible amenity.
Okay, Commissioner Moore, so then Commissioner Lang.
So if that's the case, because I'm sure anyone could come up with other incentive that they'd like added to the list. So instead of adding these four or five items, is there any way we can rephrase the flexible amenity so someone with a small lot who wants to provide something that fits that lot can do so? Because this list can easily get really long.
So there's a couple of approaches we could take that would neck down the need for us to expand the list of amenities greatly. And one approach would be to do what you suggested. The flexible amenity, as it is written already, would allow that to happen. So there's not much rewriting that would need to happen. A departure for small sites, which the Planning Commission has been amenable to giving in the past, would be another approach where we allow these amenities, as Commissioner Lang noted, essentially acknowledging that small sites have a different challenge and that incorporating these into small sites only, those that are 40,000 square feet or less, provides them an alternative to earn amenity points. So we could do that, and we could put that in the deviations for small sites. And then we could just stay with the body of the amenities as we have created them in kind of your conversations with the City Council when you had that joint meeting.
Commissioner Lang.
I feel pretty strongly that because, and I'll just point it out, things like sports and recreation facilities, public air open markets, museums, probably mid-block pedestrian crossing, is that crossing the street?
The street.
Right? And then the through-block connection. So the mid-block pedestrian crossing, almost anybody could do. But the through-block connection, most of these things are things that you could only avail yourself of if you had a pretty substantial project limit. And so I think that it's really important that we have things that are expressed on the list that a small property yes. owner could take advantage of. And so I'm fine leaving these. The only one that I would concur with Commissioner Barksdale is that in interior residential amenity space for the residents, I think the market takes care of that, and I don't okay. see that. But I would leave the other ones on the list because if you don't have things that you know that you can avail yourself of, and all you have is the flexible amenity, then I end up getting hired at some point, obviously after I'm off the Planning Commission. But that's the thing, is it just starts to get into an argument about what should and shouldn't be allowed, and why should a small property owner not have the ability to just pick something off the menu when a large property owner has. So.
Okay. So that makes sense to me for like museums, but for open air markets, a small lot, I'm not sure they would have enough space so it seems like the list needs to be pared down into what goes into the flexible amenity for anybody and what goes on to the small lot because I think a museum could go anywhere. I think an open air market could go anywhere, and if they could get it on a small lot, that'd be great. Sports and recreation facilities, there's such a wide variety that could go either place. I see this going into maybe the flexible amenities listing of such as mm. but not limited to.
Okay.
So that.
Let us take a stab at it. We can.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Including but not limited to.
So, do we.
Hey, talking like
a
lawyer.
Off of the Wallace list.
Pardon me?
Have we gone through the ones? So, we talked about those, but some of those are different.
Those are all the small site ones, and it sounded like all five of those, you were interested in all five of those with the exception of the standalone residential amenity space that was only for that property.
Are the roof gardens public, for example?
They would have to be.
I don't know that they would be.
There's a value to having roof gardens and stuff for other people because you think about the people that live across the street in a taller building that are looking down on a nice roof garden instead of looking down at a bunch of mechanical equipment, as an example. So, plus it.
Yeah. All right. I don't see landscaping fitting in this. I mean, you should be doing that anyway.
Oh, that's in the book. Yeah.
You have street standards. I guess what the idea was probably is like, and I would have phrased it as enhanced landscaping, something that's beyond. And actually, the new letter says enhanced streetscape, which goes beyond just what the current code would require.
Yeah, we happen to have one that's number five on the left-hand side.
How easy is that to define, enhanced streetscape?
It's similar to what Commissioner Lang just said. It's landscaping.
Right, but we got into the discussion about art and what's art. So I'm thinking along the same line. Is this going to be something that we put in there that's difficult to define and we've made it more complex, not less?
I would just leave it. I mean, there are very talented landscape architects that can enhance your landscaping. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, I'll consider myself outvoted on that. But
I don't know about that. I get very concerned recognizing the challenges that any project has, but especially a small site. And if they're willing to do more, especially at the streetscape, to green it up and to do more than just the street standards, I think that should be encouraged.
No, that's fine. I mean, the enhanced streetscape that's on there already is fine. I was just thinking basic landscaping just doesn't.
Yeah, no, you're. Yeah, yeah, that's.
Okay. Yeah.
I was reading.
So just to recap on this one, our direction is to. Move forward with the three things on page 206 from Bob Wallace.
Can you say what those three things are, please, just
publicly
so we're all on the same page?
Number one is publicly accessible rooftops or amenity spaces. Number two is amenity spaces on roofs or podium or tower structures. And then number three is roof gardens. And you had a short discussion about them not necessarily having to be public.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So those would apply to small sites. And then we were going to also add some example language of what the flexible amenity could include.
Okay. I cut you off and I was going to ask you a question I think you were just answering.
Nope, that's it.
So enhanced landscaping remains on the list.
Yes.
So it would be four things.
On the current
amenities. We already have it.
It's on there. Yeah. Of course it is. Okay.
Enhanced streetscape is on there. So I would like to give... if you'd like Commissioner Barksdale a chance to give some insights about the adaptive management and how we modify a system in the future.
Yes, yes. Commissioner Barksdale, please.
Yeah, so the idea here is that and you have it, I think, on the next slide, but it's more data-driven as opposed to being time-driven. So permits are when developers put their stake in the ground, right, for a project. So that being said, given the plans that are already in the works plus whatever's coming through in permits, then we can sort of project what effect that's going to have on the area, the downtown area. And then we should be able to say, to some extent, how we can revisit the amenity incentive system based on what we see coming through from that point and then adjust. So instead of it being some, you know, specific time frame, we do it based on what we, the progress of development happening in downtown.
How would we administer that? Where would that data be collected? How would it be monitored? How would we know that it was the time to look at the particular item.
So when we...
Because the calendar's really easy, because we know when we get to the date and we can set reminders.
I agree, although easy is not necessarily effective.
So easy is wonderful.
So I think, as we see the progress happening, that if we decide to weight the amenity incentive system to some extent, then we can shift weights, or we could say maybe we sunset particular amenities based on what we see coming through development projects.
One approach the state legislature has used in some cases and we have used in other cases is reporting on implementation. Mm-hmm. And we could essentially leave the 7 to 10 year update but agree to report out, for instance, on an annual basis on the amenities that are being used and how those are being taken advantage of in the city, and then do any course correction that we need to prior to that, if that becomes necessary based on that information. So, for instance, there has been, I'm looking at one state legislative requirement that tracks essentially the number of permits. We could come up with an annual reporting form of tracking the number of permits, the number of amenities used, the points, and essentially group those in a list and then evaluate those at the end of the year.
I'm wondering if we can instead, I think having the time bound as a backstop is fine. So the set, which I see here, is like the 7 year, or maybe
it's
the annual becomes,
yeah.
And then maybe it's we set thresholds for how much development, of an amenity. I don't know how likely this is, but if we see, I think we saw an influx of parking, underground parking, right? And then we said, okay, it seems that the market has sort of picked this up on its own. Was it parking? I think it was. So how do we make that determination? How have we made that determination? Let's apply that moving forward too.
Mr. Lang?
This isn't perfect,
yeah.
But the CAC unanimously recommended that we have I think it was a 5-year look back kind of in these things, so that the amenity system is getting updated more than every 30 years. And I don't know, and I sort of made an allusion to the Bell-Red 5-year look back, because they were supposed to have done that in a couple of years ago, as in May of 2014. So there's a concern, obviously, that even the best intentions about having some sort of look back and audit or whatever just doesn't happen unless there's unless the council prioritizes it or there's something there. But for what it's worth, there was a unanimous recommendation at the CAC level that there be this periodic look back for exactly what you're saying. And if that's not reflected in the draft and you're saying we should put some language in there, I'd be certainly supportive of that.
Yeah.
That's reflected on page 168.
Yeah, just to be clear, it does say periodically reviewed every 7 to 10 years initially by the council, and then the commission wanted to see if it should be...
Reduced
to a shorter time interval or an alternative approach, mm-hmm. as Commissioner Barksdale was suggesting.
Yeah, so I would prefer to see a both and, not an either or. So having the time frame as a backstop, but also trying to figure out more innovative ways of doing it based on the data.
Some reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. We can add something like that.
Okay.
Does that give you enough direction?
Yes.
Okay.
So are we leaving this time frame at 7 to 10 or reducing that? In combination with what?
Right. So,
Commissioner
Barksdale,
it's written in the code 7 to 10 currently, but we could reduce that to 4 to 7, with council initiation, of course.
Could it be something that's reported on the website and tracked real time, so that anybody going in can look and see what's there and can then contact staff and say, we've got. Everybody's doing this one thing, and we really need some of these other things done, and can we take a look at things? Okay.
Do you want to change it to,
Is 7 to 10 fine, or do you want to change it?
Personally, I'd rather see a shorter timeline than 7 to 10, but...
Mm-hmm.
I would agree 5 to 7.
Why don't we do 5 to 7 and draft up some language about reporting?
So just as an example, in terms of implementation, if this stuff is going into an electronic system, you could set thresholds and your BI tool, and that could see.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. So the next topics that we had were the tower separation first, and then we have the reduced floor plate issue that Commissioner Lang brought up at the last meeting. So if it's okay, we'll do them. We'll address them in that order.
Yes.
I'm
good with that.
So just to recap, your previous meetings, you gave us direction to have a 20-foot setback from interior property lines for between project limits, essentially. And the discussion there was, should it be 20 or 40? So we have that direction written into the code. We've also gone and raised the definition of a tower to be 100 feet as opposed to 75 feet, and also where tower spacing occurs to be at 80 feet instead of 45 feet. So that's previous direction. We don't need to readdress that. You did desire further discussion on 80-foot and 60-foot tower spacing. I'm reading through the Bob Wallace letter, and... just noting that their discussion in the Bob Wallace letter mainly focuses on one site that they did a kind of an analysis of, and was showing at least on that one site what they thought the proper spacing was. I would be interested in the commission's, if they thought that direction should apply everywhere, or if we want to have the discussion for 60 versus 80 for the rest of downtown, because they did focus in just on one parcel on their analysis.
Mr. Lang?
Right. I'm going to bring a motion, surprise, and I'm going to explain my thought process actually before I bring it. Okay. So ever since the stakeholder community sort of learned or started to understand, if you will, like the tower spacing thing, what we as a commission have done is what I'm going to call whack-a-mole. Like, we keep looking at all of these different things and stuff, and staff has been amazing and running and like researching the country and the world and putting all these things together, and it's like, so I have a modest proposal, which is, let's just go back to the way it is right now and challenge somebody to come in on May 24th with something that's actually going to work, and if we like it, we adopt it. So I move that the May 24th draft just be what the current code is as far as tower setback, tower spacing, with the understanding that obviously it's up in the air to discuss, but rather than us continue to play whack-a-mole about, like, well, is it 80 feet or 60 feet or 20 feet or something in between or whatever, let's just put it back the way it is and let somebody make a compelling reason to change it. So I move that we...
May I ask a clarifying question? Yeah. Do you mean the current code or the consolidated code?
I mean the way the code is today, in the actual Bellevue land use code as it exists today. Not our draft, I mean the actual code as it exists. So on tower spacing, just let's go back. I'm saying let's have our draft be what the current code is.
What is the current code?
The current code is a 40 feet tower separation. It's
across property
lines. It's based on building code.
Okay.
And whatever the current code is.
That wouldn't be apply. The building code doesn't apply a tower separation on an individual property, so that you would lose the building separation on a single project limit.
So, and I'm just saying, I get all that, and I've gotten wonderful presentations about like the sky may or may not fall and all the rest of this. We've heard a lot on it. What's happened is we've gone around and around and around, and so I think just trying to get us focused for the 24th, I move that the May 24th draft be what the existing code is as it is today, and we'll listen with all seven of us here to hear if we hear something that creates a compelling reason to change it.
Okay. I just want to know what the current is. So I got you on the current tower separation. What's the current setback?
The current would require, the current just defaults to the building code. So the current from a property line would be 20 feet unless you combined a property line. And so on a single site, in our consultation with the building official, there is no prescribed limit between buildings because they're considered a single building for the purposes of administration of the building code. There is not a provision in the land use code currently about building separation. Mm. So if just bringing people back to the CAC's recommendation, the building separation was one of the hallmarks of their recommendation for light and air and separation. So that doesn't, and that was something that was new in the code in looking at our current landscape. They felt that
it. Yeah, I respectfully disagree that you could characterize this as being a hallmark of the CAC's recommendation when I spent 15 months on that and I don't recall having any meaningful conversation about tower separation. I don't recall any of that. I've read and reread the packet. Okay. I understand that people talk about light and air and all the rest of that, but nobody in that process said we need to increase our tower separation. Just like nobody actually made a recommendation that we go to higher heights with the exception of rezoning the OLB and some little tweaks here, but we see like that's taken up a lot of our bandwidth here. So I'm just, mm-hmm. you know, one of the guiding council principles and one of the guiding principles of this process has been do no harm. All we've heard about the tower spacing stuff as we have tried to do thing, and I think we're trying to do the right thing, but guess what? The road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? So let's go back to where we are and see if something happens in the next 2 weeks where somebody comes in and says, here is something that will provide an assurance of more separation, and it's not going to have all of these unintended consequences that everything else that we've seen has had. That's just what I'm proposing. So,
Commissioner Barksdale.
So,
and it's a draft.
No, I get that. So, I think generally, fine. But what my concern is within the property. So, if there's no separation right now within the property, and the CAC was advocating for more light and air, there's a possibility of being less light and air, which would be harm in the opposite direction, right?
You still have to meet building code. And as staff would tell you, we've adopted or are proposing to adopt new design guidelines that talk about reducing floor plates as you move up, and there's like all of these other things, and there's just the sort of practical matter of as you go higher, if you choose to go higher, you have to you don't have any more FAR, so you start stretching, and there's other things that end up there. But I guess to me, like, the simple thing is the proof's in the pudding, and the pudding is, sorry to take a bad metaphor and apply it, but downtown. You know, we don't have people in here screaming at us that their towers are too close. We don't have, you know, nobody who has talked about downtown Bellevue, even John Talton, you know, hasn't written the scathing article about the Bellevue skyline and the towers being too close or whatever. It's just, it again, and I made this comment 2 weeks ago, it has felt to me like a solution looking for a problem. And instead, what we have found is that this commission has spent a huge amount of time and well-intentioned trying to come up with something that isn't what the existing code is, but isn't going to just gut redevelopment or development potential in downtown. We haven't fallen on that, or we haven't found that yet. And so my proposal is, let's just keep things the way they are. Mm-hmm. And we've got 2 weeks for somebody to make a compelling case for how it should be different. And what I would sort of suggest, because we've got a lot of the same people here, we have seen, I don't remember which architecture firm, and I apologize, was it Collins Worman maybe, or, you know, we had this and I still have, I didn't bring it tonight, doggone it, but we had these really nice materials that were made that showed, like, this is what would happen with this rule. So maybe somebody who really cares of this, Weber Thompson, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you your fine competition. But, you know, if somebody thinks that there's a better way to do tower spacing,
that isn't going to gut development or redevelopment in downtown Bellevue, then give us this and show us that it works. Otherwise, I don't know what we're doing, so or what basis we're doing it.
I just have one more question. All right, so when the CAC talked about providing for light and air, was it because there was insufficient light and air based on some of the development, or was it just aspirational in terms of just moving forward?
Commissioner Barksdale, I'll just say, I have to reject the predicate of your question, sir, because the conversations that were had at the CAC level about light and air, we have spent more time tonight talking about light and air than the CAC talked about in the 3-hour tour. So it's not an unimportant thing, but we were talking a lot about the amenity system. We talked a lot about the OLB. We talked a lot about the actual sort of streetscape, the mm-hmm. sidewalk standards, the landscaping standards, these types of things. We talked a lot about wishing there might be other places where we could get an assemblage to have another park somewhere in downtown. We talked about those things. Not a whole lot about tower separation or about that stuff. And to the extent we did talk about it, it was, should we consider higher heights? And it was, well, we could consider higher heights if it basically resulted in skinnier buildings. So.
Okay.
Stephanie?
Yes, Commissioner Morso. The way I understand the CAC, it's a vision. And I think the work that we do here is how we implement that vision. Now the conversation that we've had with staff, with tower separation and setback, is to make that vision a reality. And from the stakeholders, I think the issue was the combination of tower separation of 80 feet and then the 40-foot setback.
Tower setback.
Right. And I think we came to a conclusion by leaving the setback at 20 feet, then maybe expanding the tower separation either to 60 or 80 from the current code. That could work for a lot of the stakeholders and also achieve what the CAC was looking for in terms of light and air and livability. If we're going to have these taller buildings, I think it makes sense to have this tower separation being increased. And then the other thing, Commissioner Carlson is not here, but I remember him asking staff to come back with the 60-foot versus the 80-foot. Mm-hmm. So he is not part of this discussion. So changing the code, the draft, to the existing code, I don't know how that's going to work with Commissioner Carlson, Commissioner Davidos, and Hillworth. They're not here either. So maybe another way to do it, instead of asking staff to go back and leave the code as is, because we've been having this conversation for 2 years now, is to leave it as is, because I think all stakeholders at this point are pretty okay with it, meaning either 60 or 80-foot tower separation, 20-foot setback, and just make a decision based on that. Because asking staff to go back and change the code and then on the 24th, we're going to have another conversation again about it. It's like the wheel keeps turning and turning and turning and turning. And why wasn't this brought up when this conversation started? Why now when we're at the tail end gate of making a decision on this?
Well, my recollection is there was a large gap of time from when we first learned about 80-foot tower separation to the more recent meetings where we're really putting this all together. So it maybe fell off of people's radar.
I think to Commissioner Morso's point, we have met with many stakeholders. The 80-foot tower separation, whether it's 60, whether it's 80, whatever that number is, has been in the draft since November, and that wasn't the lightning rod. The lightning rod was created with the
side, the interior tower setback from the interior property lines. And that has been removed and replaced. It's no longer 40 feet, it's 20 feet, which is consistent with the building code. So right now we have reverted back to the public hearing draft that people didn't much comment on the 80-foot tower separation, other than is 80 feet the right number? Should it be less? Whatever. And we have eliminated the thing that was frustrating and was added later.
Your thoughts, Commissioner Barksdale?
Yeah, I was... You're not going to light me up this one, Commissioner Lane, but I was thinking we leave it we leave it as is and leave people to make a compelling reason why we should change it from what we've proposed currently.
So then my thoughts are really complicated. The 80-foot, in light of all the discussions and in light of the picture, it seems maybe a little too ambitious. Kind of feel like when you're going in and negotiating for something, you ask for the moon and then you expect it to come back. Well, it never came back. So I think I'd be comfortable with putting 60 feet there in terms of it's not as radical of, it's not as much of a departure as what we have now and not as ambitious. So it sounds like I'm just averaging the two, which I'm really not. But I think it accomplishes a lot of what we're intending without doing unintended.
Hey,
Commissioner Lane.
If for purposes, again, this is just our May 24th draft. If for purposes, we don't, you know, I can count to four even with my hands in my pockets. My motion, as I've proposed it, is not going to carry. If somebody else would like to make a recommendation, and if Chair Walter, or because you are our chair tonight, if you would like to propose that we do 60 feet instead of 80 feet, leaving the other things that staff has already come in and gone back, you know, to the old code, if you will, or the existing code, and that's our starting point on May 24th, I'm absolutely amenable to that.
Okay.
And I, to Commissioner Barksdale's point, say, all right, he saw my show me, and he said, no, you show me. That's fair. So there we are.
Commissioner Morso.
I'd like to pass a motion to take Commissioner Lang's motion and amend it to for the tower separation to be 60 feet and the draft code.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So we'll change the 80 feet to 60 feet. Done. All right.
Just 20 feet to go.
Okay. And I would like to take a 5-minute health break. We can all get up and stretch our legs and before we tackle tower separation.
We just did tower separation.
I said that, but I meant floor plate.
I don't even think you need to vote on it, Trish.
Excellent.
It doesn't matter. It
should be a long one.
I wouldn't
need
it.
Great.
Because
they already passed.
Aaron has to leave anyway. We talked about it, so I wouldn't need much.
We're done. Okay. We're not going to talk about it. That's one of these.
She's thinking the same thing I am.
She said I have to keep my hands like this.
Hey, do I need to ask again?
My mistake. That's what you were doing.
He did?
He just stepped out.
Oh, why? We can't start until we got him back. So.
I have to develop different sign language. Okay. Well, a foil will step back, sir. It's something that Bob Wallace wanted anyway.
Yeah. Do I need to explain to him what they're doing?
No. Okay. I'll do it. I'll tell him the incorporated the string test.
I mean, it's okay. Picture.
Oh, yeah. And but Emil's already moved on to...
The only tricky part is the floor plate thing, and I don't know what we're doing. I mean, are we just doing the...
That is the...
that's the PMF?
PMF.
Okay, excellent.
And that's... What date is that? Which letter is that?
May 10th.
Which I didn't... Okay. So I don't need to do that either. Or do I need to talk to him about that? I'm happy to do it.
Emil, what's left to the PMF? There isn't any more after the PMF piece. So we don't need to talk about that.
Well, Morrison's letter on the garage.
Oh, I wasn't even home 24 hours.
But they didn't really... I just bring it up in there. Did you read their letter?
And I was reading in the tropics, you know.
They got it in there so much. You told them don't get it in later, but they got it in today. It'd be just thinking of our sanity, it'd be easier for us to, like, conclude on it. I guess if we agree with it, we can put it in their final code.
The allergist said...
I didn't dwell on it.
There's a lot of
I keep everything. I keep everything pretty short.
So what is this?
Floor plate.
Yeah. Are we gonna
watch these kids?
Yes.
I think they were in middle school.
What?
And they all got on scooters and were driving scooters. I thought those kids looked pretty darn good driving scooters.
Paper?
So I could say that person was crazy. And they don't
okay. What are we doing?
Floor plates?
No, I'm wondering where.
I allergy attacked.
Oh.
We can't start that. So.
They looked like it was just part of their.
Here. Do you want to tell people what we're doing? We're reading.
I was thinking, Daisy's fucking right up. But that, I would have. That was a great suggestion.
Can we do anything now?
Okay. You okay?
Yeah, I can't breathe, and there's something in here that's bad.
Do we need to adjourn?
Yeah, that's fine. Let's just motor through this thing, and I'll excuse myself as needed.
Okay. So we're back in session.
Okay. So we wanted to bring back a discussion of an item that Commissioner Lang brought up at the most recent meeting regarding the reduced floor plates if you're exceeding the trigger height. So. We essentially had gotten earlier direction from the commission to remove the 10% open outdoor plaza requirement if you exceed the trigger height. The other related element and one of the objectives of doing taller buildings was actually to result in a more slender urban form. So Commissioner Lang had some good insights about how the proposed 10% floor plate reduction would play out in an example that he gave. We would want to note that I think Commissioner Lang noted that he thought that the floor plate reductions were probably more important in some parts of downtown and not as much in others. I think the example he did was in the O1 district of an office tower, if I recall correctly. So we want to be able to, when we drill down on how the floor plate reductions might play out, if we want to talk about maybe different districts in downtown as well. And just quickly, we wanted to show what the current version of the code has as far as floor plate reductions. This is an O1 example of a residential tower. You can see that the white part of that tower in the front is the existing building height of 450. The current code is written where if you exceed that tower height, you need to reduce your floor plate by 10%. It's not a large reduction on each facade if you do it equally. If you were to kind of suck in all sides of the facade equally from a standard 13,500 square foot floor plate down to 10% reduction, it's only about 3.5 or 4 feet on each side. Clearly, there's a number of different ways somebody might reduce a floor plate. You could reduce it just on one side or two sides or all three or four sides of that tower structure, but we're just showing the massing of the building and what it might look like. There are code provisions also if you did want to diminish your floor plates and kind of average them up from 80 feet and above, you can do that. You just can't have any one floor plate exceed the maximum in the zone. So it would result in a more kind of elegant structure that somebody could do. So this is meant to just be the massing of what the kind of by the book floor plate reduction would be. So that's residential. We're also noting on this that at least as drafted, the original concept was to have along with the floor plate reduction, a 10% open space requirement if you exceed the trigger height. But that's not part of your current recommendation. That was removed earlier. For a non-residential or office tower in that same zone, they're typically bigger floor plates. You can do 24,000 square foot floor plates above 80 feet. So if you were to go up and reduce it by 10%, you're going to see about a five foot reduction on each facade if you were going to do it equally. It does get you down to about 21,600 size floor plate above that trigger height. And we also were showing a 20% reduction as well from 24,000 down to 19,200. So these are just graphics to kind of show you what we're dealing with in the current code, see how that syncs up with kind of your interpretation and how you're moving forward with your work. Some of the key considerations that we want to note that the example that Commissioner Lang gave, and I think our opinion too, is that the office floor plates are definitely larger and can be more impactful than residential floor plates. They are larger. 24,000 is pretty typical. 20,000 where residential is 13,500 and below, and pretty typical to see 12,000 square foot floor plates. I think you also want to keep in mind the feasibility of the reduced floor plate. As you get down below 20,000 for office floor plates, you start to get to the point where we hear stakeholder comments about that being a feasible floor plate size. So clearly a 30% reduction, for example, on this office building would take it well below 20,000 square feet at the upper levels, which might take it into the realm of having issues about just feasibility of having someone do that. And the last one is where the floor plate reductions greater than 10% might make sense. So for what type of use, residential or office, and then in what zones. So that's what we wanted to queue up for you. And I know Commissioner Lang brought this up for us and wanted to have a short discussion about it.
Okay, and with that, Commissioner Lang, do you have anything to add to Emil's synopsis?
No, I mean, I appreciate it. I think that the slides that you've prepared kind of show exactly what I was talking about, which is that it essentially allows for an imperceptibly smaller floor plate to go on top of the existing floor plate. And I understand that there BDA has been having some conversations about trying to, you know, come up with something to sort of address the concern about that we're not getting taller, slimmer buildings. We're just getting taller buildings with this essentially the same mass above them. And, you know, I'm not actually checking email. I'm doing math over here.
Yeah.
About just looking at some of the sizes. And I guess the concern that I had, and I said this the last meeting, is I am not in a position to say, well, you know, let's just make the floor plate blank size, because there are different size needs for different uses. And so I'm not in a position to say, well, you just tell the commercial folks that 15,000 square feet, that's all they get. And somebody says, well, you'd never build that, bless you. And you quit because you need 20,000 square feet. Or I don't want to be doing that, but at the same time, I still think that it is disingenuous for us to say we're giving or we're proposing height increases and essentially in the core of a 150-foot increment. And, you know, similar increments actually in some of the other zones with the hope of getting taller, skinnier buildings, but we don't have anything in code that actually says thou shalt give us a taller and skinnier building. And so I've thought a lot over the last week, about 2 weeks, like, well, what would that look like? You know, maybe it's like for every 10 feet you go, or for every floor you go above the trigger height, you have to reduce your floor plate by 20%, and you have to reduce it going down. So, like, as you go up, you're pushing that down. I don't know that that's viable, and I don't feel like I'm in a position to say that that's what we should do, because I think what we get out of that is just a different form of the tower spacing discussion, and I'm sure Weber Thompson and, you know, Jack McCullough and 11 other people will be like in here, you know, showing me what a fool I am, and they do that anyway. But so I don't want to propose like this is what we should do, but I'm just still concerned. So,
Commissioner Morrison.
Well, Commissioner Langs reminded me that I had asked, because this topic came, I think, at the last meeting, and I asked staff to come back to us with example of similar cities that have the height, the maximum height we're considering, and the FAR that we're considering, and what their floor plates are, but in the instances where they actually end up with slender buildings. Does staff have anything with that?
We don't. In tonight's presentation, we don't have any.
Okay.
On that specific item.
Okay.
Floor plate sizes vis-a-vis height. Is that what?
Well,
the question was?
If you say, for example, we're considering going up to 600, and I think in the 02, which is the core, I think 01 actually we're thinking of going up to 8 FAR for.
It's 8 FAR in the 01 for an office building.
So if we take another city that has a similar height, similar FAR, and they end up with a slender building, what is the floor plate that they have as a requirement?
We can bring back more information on that specific. I think our research on office has shown that the 24,000 and 20,000 are pretty typical.
Okay.
Floor plates. Some places allow bigger ones, generally lower down towards the bottom of the building. And when you have the interesting forms of some of the iconic skylines you see across the U.S., they clearly do taper it down, but it's not a majority of their floors, and it's more, you know, a sculptural element that they're putting on the top of the building for kind of a signature design element.
Okay, so 20, you said 20,
20 to 24. And the residential, Vancouver is our kind of nearest neighbor that does do things quite a bit smaller than even 10 or 12,000. But we were hearing it with this floor plate reduction might be more of an issue on the office standpoint, because those are naturally bigger floor plates where I think it is a concern to have a 24,000 square foot floor plate or something that looks like it going up to a 600 foot tall building. I would say the the ability to do a 600-foot tall office tower at 24,000 would take some land assemblage to have enough land area. It's not
28 acres.
Yeah. So there are bonuses in the O1 that people can get, but there is some creativity that needs to come into play to have an office building go up to that max height. But there are office buildings right now that do go up to 450, so being able to pierce mm-hmm. that 450 limit, I think, is we need to plan for that.
Commissioner Lang, did you have anything in addition?
No, I've been trying to run the math about just figuring out, like, the FAR, not getting too into the weeds about the bonuses. I mean, if you're looking at an office building trying to go to 600 feet at, you know, and I just use 22,000 as the floor plate,
mm-hmm.
You'd need 25-30 acres of land in order to get the 1.2 million square feet that is. And I do recognize that most of the product that we would see on these larger sites is probably sort of what we've seen with, like, the Lincoln Square 2 and mm-hmm. even, like, the Bellevue Towers and Washington Square Towers, where you're actually using two towers mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, one mass, uh-huh. which has the effect, one, of probably limiting what your ceiling is going to be anyway, just as you try to stretch that FAR over it. And number two, if you're going up 80 feet as your podium, every story in there is essentially one FAR because you're building to the property lines. And so it's not exactly that, but you...
Yeah.
And so I get that the FAR becomes a limiting factor and starts to stretch the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I still feel like I'm sort of in a vacuum of, like, how can I know that we're not going to end up with just some monolithic mass that mm-hmm. That is actually antithetical to the livability principles that we talked about going back 4 years. So.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a recommendation in all of that?
No, I'm not. All I'll do is create my own version of the 80-foot, 40-foot setback. I've thrown a lot of ideas out. I have had some what I thought were very helpful conversations with some design professionals to just try to understand it. And I don't want to be the one that does the harm. But I'm hoping that we'll hear something within the next 2 weeks so that we don't make a recommendation to the council that is absolutely antithesis of the of livability.
Okay. One approach might be to, we do have the 10% reduction in the current draft of your code right now. If you'd like that to remain, but have us both think at the staff level and be listening to the public and stakeholders about ideas they might have to help ensure taller, more slender towers, we can bring information back to you on the 24th. I'm not hearing any firm direction on changing anything to a greater percentage than 10% at this point.
When did the letter, does it have the floor plate in it?
I thought that the letter spoke more to the OLB.
Because I know in other documents that Bob Wallace brought forward, they were asking for a larger floor plate, and
request in the OLB.
Okay.
And because I didn't have that document, I would have said we should have made those changes too.
We have two different geographies. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was on the letter, so that.
Right.
It's on page 204.
204. Thank you.
Bottom paragraph.
Mr. Marso.
Thank you.
Which is why I wasn't comfortable with it moving forward.
Yeah, I think if I'm seeing the only reference in Bob Wallace's letter on 204 is that there is the floor plate reduction in the code. It doesn't look like they're amending it.
I think the issue is actually raised on 207.
Yeah.
Page 207, the maximum floor plate for MU.
Okay.
So if we were to incorporate all of these as you previously directed, it appears that there would be, there's actually alternative directions suggested for the maximum floor plates.
In addition to the OLB, like Cross City or just the OLB?
MU.
Okay. Ms. Holland, can you direct me to the...
It's on page 207. It's the first full paragraph under maximum floor plates.
So it looks like they're, in a nutshell, they're wanting, suggesting that the max floor plate be increased for office so that then when the 10% reduction does get applied, it brings it back down to 20,000 effectively.
So do we have direction to give? Leave it the way that it is currently drafted? Do we have, with the adjustments from the letter?
Okay, just a reminder, one second, Stephanie. So with the 10% reduction, the lowest maximum floor plate in the big SUs is what? Is it less than 20,000 then?
I'm sorry, I was looking at the chart. No worries. I'm sorry.
So with the draft as we have it in the OLB and the MU, with the 10% reduction, what does that reduce to the, what does that reduce the lowest maximum floor plate to? Is it less than 20,000 then?
It would be in MU. That's the point above 80 feet. So that's on page 42 of your packet materials is the dimensional chart.
Yeah.
So in MU currently it has a floor plate of 22,000 up to 40 feet and 20,000 above 80.
Okay.
And I think the suggestion is to equalize the floor plate sizes in MU so that they're both 22,000, so when the 10% diminishing floor plate kicks in, it will, it won't reduce it to less than 20,000.
Okay. That's what I thought they were asking. Again, if we're looking for slender building, a smaller floor plate achieves that, but I'll leave it to the rest of the commission.
Right, and mathematically that makes sense, but then the other side of that equation is, will it get built? So I think we can assure a smaller floor plate is going to make thinner buildings, but it might make invisible buildings.
That's my concern. I mean, I've been running a lot of the numbers using 22,000 square feet as the basic commercial floor plate and looking at what actual heights are achievable, what you know, what types of property assemblages you need, and you know, this is the problem. And I've brought this up at a previous meeting, and please do not take this as an endorsement of Seattle, but of the couple of zones in Seattle that really kind of look at some things with the towers, with tower spacing, if you look in the Denny Triangle, which is a very unique circumstance because you've got, you know, it's the triangle because it's just the way the city is laid out, kind of goofy and stuff coming at. But you have a situation there where, and I believe that Mr. McCullough could explain this better than me, but essentially your north-south facade, your tower width above like 75 feet can't be more than 80% of your north-south facade. And my understanding is the purpose of that is because the sun comes up in the east, goes up, and then it drops in the west, but the sun at its lower points as it's providing it, you know, light is, you know, your east-west exposure. In at noon, it's overhead, right? So the idea is that by having some restriction on your north-south facade width, you're at least allowing for the sun when it's at a lower angle of the sky to have, you know, there's that separation between buildings. I am not saying we should adopt that north-south facade thing here. It might be that we care more about east-west or whatever. I'm just saying there's other ways of putting a metric in our, you know, in the code that might do this that's maybe more flexible, you know, ends up, it ends up kind of being a different way of reducing massing and ensuring that, like, at least light in where it's most vulnerable just because of the position of the sun in the sky is preserved. Again, I don't know that's an appropriate thing for downtown Bellevue. We don't have streets coming at each other like this in these funky little blocks like they do in the Denny Triangle, but that's a solution that Seattle's come up with.
But we do have sunshine, and we do have shadows,
and
we do have the issue of livability, and with all the structural pieces that we're talking about, I'm more adept at talking about livability, like what do we want? What have we heard? We want buildings that can get built. We want buildings that are appealing. We want a downtown that people want to live in. Because without the downtown that people want to live in, a lot of the other things that are planned for downtown go south. So I think it's really important to listen to the people who live and use downtown, what works for them. So I guess that would be an ask is to have, along the lines of what Commissioner Lang was just talking about, what would be the ideal, given the parameters that are already pretty much set and maybe just tweaking around the edges, you know, what would be ideal? Because the sun does come up on one side, it goes down on the other side. There are shadows. Is there something we can do about that? It feels pretty late in the game, but I don't know. Because I think that's all what's really important. And in terms of how it gets in code, I'm glad there's smarter people at this table than I that can get it there.
So, for everybody that's out there listening, like Mr. Bannon, who's smiling well, you know, as Commissioner Barksdale would say, bring us something compelling. So.
Okay, so shall we keep the draft code as written with the 10%, and we can have the stakeholders give additional feedback, and we can come up with some ideas on the elements of the code that might result actually in taller, more slender buildings.
Yep.
And we can also highlight elements of in the design guidelines that relate to the tower form that I think are an important component as well.
Right.
So we can spend some time
articulating. With those things in mind, what makes it livable? What makes not only the getting more people to move here, but the people who have invested their time and belief in the downtown livability from the get-go, I think that's very important.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the appropriate time to ask. I think it's really important with the meeting on the 24th that the packets be to us, on, especially with any information from the public with creative ideas so that there's time to digest them. This packet was really large, and I feel a little bit behind the eight ball having been out, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we need to make the next meeting really productive by having the materials in our hands. So I'm asking if people are going to send things in sooner rather than later.
Yep.
And Mr. Cullen, if I could ask, I don't know if we're going to have a meeting on the 17th. I don't know that it's going to be warranted. But if we could have public comment come to us 1 week in, like on maybe on the 17th, and then the day before the 24th, so that if there are ideas that are coming in that we can see them with time to review, that would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on? Okay.
Just one note to sort of piggyback on the first thing you said, and that is, I understand developer economics are important, but it would be great if we get a balanced perspective. So there's focus on livability and developer economics.
That is excellent point. Thank you, Commissioner Barksdale.
So we've been looking over the materials that we had prepared and comparing them to Mr. Wallace's letter and the PMF letter from May 10th and believe that the OLB floor plate issue has been subsumed in the direction that you gave with respect to PMF investments and that the A Lawn Fortress project doesn't really have much more to talk about because we drafted suggested language that was, I think Mr. McCullough noted, was consistent with what their clients need, with their clients' needs, and we would just move that to the consolidated code. No, you have some questions on that.
Commissioner Morso.
The land building site, when I spoke to the stakeholder, Michelle and I were a little bit concerned that this could be a spot zoning situation.
Mm-hmm.
How many sites within that B2 MU overlay would be impacted by this change? Is it going to be just the Elan Fortress?
So actually, we did do a review, and it's not dissimilar from what we did with the Bellevue Gateway site, acknowledging that there are these kind of thin areas where a zoning line essentially bisects a site, and you have to provide some flexibility for development across that zoning line. So in the B2,
go off the slides, correct?
Oh yes. Oh, thank you. In the B2 with the underlying MU, the Elan Fortress site right now is the only property assemblage that is bisected by the deep B, essentially. So this footnote would apply to it and doesn't currently apply to any other sites, but it wouldn't be a spot zone because there could be other sites assembled that would meet those characteristics.
Within that mm-hmm. B2 MU
along
overlay.
That band? There could be in the future. Okay.
And what is the maximum height that we're agreeing upon at the end of the day?
Sure. So the footnote is such that it allows some flexibility actually within the, remember the Fortin Group had requested the flexibility for multi-height towers, and that was provided for variable tower heights between 176 and 264. With an average of 220, and that's in footnote 12. It's on page 195 of your materials. And then for Fortress and Elan, we essentially acknowledged that their site had unique circumstances because it was bisected by the DB, and they are allowed to have a progressively taller building on the edge, which is more like MU, so it actually graduates the heights that would be allowed as you move from west to east.
So the east end would be taller than
correct.
The west
and
end.
It would have a maximum height permitted of...
is it 288?
288.
288, okay.
Just yeah, I don't know why that's not jumping out at me, but yes,
288. It's okay. On the screen, too.
Of course it is.
That's why I do that.
I'd like to ask for clarification of the commissioners. I had the recollection that we said a single tower no more than 220 feet. Did that change in the interim? I know I missed a meeting because now it's at 264, and I don't know why anybody would build two buildings with an average of 220 if they could build a single big one at 264.
So it's only to address that condition where you have a property split by that zoning line. So it's allowed to be 288 where it's right adjacent to the MU. So it's allowing that single building in B2 perimeter district.
But for anybody in B2 can do that.
Only if you have a building that is in that condition that it has multiple buildings across that zoning line. And it's only in that northwest neighborhood.
Really feels a lot like a spot site.
It's not.
Can I ask just a real, real fundamental question? When you were doing the outline of the districts, mm-hmm. or maybe, and then the overlay, is that something that's always existed or just got created for this process?
The nine districts?
The nine districts and
those
then
actually relate, those neighborhoods actually, oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking about the neighborhoods
districts.
Or the perimeter districts? Those perimeter districts have existed for quite a long time. They haven't existed since the very start of the, since the zoning code was initially adopted,
okay.
But they were added.
It would have been so much easier if nobody split a property.
Yes, it would have been. You're right. The boundary of the downtown split some properties, too.
And then just to clarify, in the rest of that green area up on the screen, the single tower height is 220 feet. So that
okay.
is, you
Thank
are
you.
Correct on that. But we were focusing in on
the
blue area for this slide.
Okay.
Good color.
Excellent.
Okay. So if there's no other issues, I think that concludes our presentation for tonight.
Excellent.
And we have direction.
Commissioner Morrison?
Amending the incentives, can we talk about the 25 versus the 28?
Oh, sure.
Since that's in the Wallace letter,
that
supposedly
that
is going to make its
letter.
Way to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
It was only 204, 206. And it's on the bottom of 205. The fee and lieu rate. So if people want to navigate to the place that Commissioner Morso was referring to, it's on page 205 in the BDA comments that the interest is adjusting the fee and lieu rate from 28 to 25. Currently, the fee and lieu rate is trying to incent individuals to place the amenities that they're earning on the property rather than paying a fee and lieu. So that's the justification for the delta in the rate.
Which I'm totally fine with because I think the purpose of the amenity incentives is to get the community what the community needs and also be to the advantage of the city. However, I think we put 75% of open space on the amenity incentive list for a reason. So I would rather see those things being built on site. Mm-hmm. And I think having a difference of 25 versus 28 could potentially make that happen. Versus if we were to make it 25 even, what's the incentive there? That's my take on it, and I wanted to bring that up to the commission and see what the other
okay.
commissioners think.
Commissioner Barton, no thoughts?
Not
Commissioner
yet.
Lang?
So I have kind of a whole different take on the fee and lieu, and I've been sort of angling in this direction probably since the CAC started. I think that the big thing that we heard at the CAC level and that we continue to hear is this idea of if publicly accessible ground floor open space, if you will. Okay. Probably the best example of publicly accessible ground floor open space that we have is this thing called Downtown Park, right? And what we recognized at the CAC and kind of recognized going forward is that it's hard to come up with an assemblage. Like, the city could certainly exercise its condemnation authority and, like, say, we're just going to take out this chunk of properties and build another park. But what I would just look at, and, you know, this commission has been very sensitive to the idea, not just in downtown livability, but in all different instances where people have talked about a fee in lieu, that you actually, like, reinvest that fee in lieu into the area where the project was, right? Whether it's affordable housing or whatever it is. So my sort of look at it is, I don't know if I want to get into the 25, 28, or whatever it is, the dollar amount. What I'd rather see is, like, if we're going to do a fee in lieu, let's do a downtown-only park impact fee. Downtown's the only district, like, and I know Ms. Helland and all staff gets this well, but, like, under state law, you can have the entire jurisdiction, like the whole city, be a district, or you can break it up. And when you collect impact fees for something in that district, you also have to keep them in a segregated account, and then you have to spend them in that district. And so
and one of the things about park and school and transportation impact fees is you can't get charged twice. So if you have a transportation impact fee because you need, there's an intersection that's planned to be built, if you go and build the intersection, you get a credit against your impact fees for that, as like as an example. So if you had a situation where downtown developers and property owners had a choice of putting, if you will, publicly accessible ground level open space on their properties or paying a park impact fee that would then be collected and expended for those purposes in downtown, I think that there's some integrity to that, and that's kind of where I would go with it. Because to Ms. Helen's point, you say, well, what we're trying to do is make people actually build the thing instead of paying the fee. So let's make the fee kind of higher or whatever. My concern about that is under both the state statute as well as constitutional law, you've got a nexus proportionality thing. And if we have a system that is de facto acknowledging that we're requiring you to pay more money to not build the thing than it may be worth, that could be tenuous. Now, there's certainly an interpretation of the Kuntz case, the U.S. Supreme Court case, that would say as long as you have one constitutionally sound means of meeting the condition, in other words, you could meet it on your site in a proportional way, or you could pay more to not put it on your site, it may still actually pass muster. And I've probably gone on way too much, but the bottom line is, if we want to see more park space and publicly accessible park space in downtown, probably the only way we're going to see that is if we have a downtown park impact fee and all the funds that are collected get expended at downtown.
Okay, and that is something that we've discussed before, not the district of downtown, but the idea of a park impact fee. And I'm well in support of that. I think it's good to, for every square foot of area people are going to live or work in, there should be an amount, not an exact amount, to recreate. And a park is different than open space. And in my mind, we don't have a definition from the Parks Board yet. But I think it's really important to, and I don't know, is that something that we can do, or does that go in the transmittal letter that we would like to, goes in the transmittal letter?
Yes, I'm going to. We would, park impact fee would require a considerable amount of research and preparation to calibrate, and mm-hmm. other jurisdictions around us are doing it. I think Redmond, Emil did some work and found that Redmond was
updating
their park impact fee.
Okay.
So that would take some time. Our comprehensive plan speaks to looking for other ways and financial avenues to create park impact parks space, and we can certainly add that to the recommendation.
Okay, I think that's great. So then, Commissioner Lang, if we pull park impact fee, then if we had for other amenities a separation of $25 versus $28, would you support that, not support that?
I'm concerned about sort of a tacit admission that we're sort of overcharging. The park impact fee is just one thing. If we're getting into some of the other stuff, I guess, I don't want to support anything that becomes a deterrent to development. So,
the other way to look at it is, how do we put a system in place that benefits the residents and the community?
Well, I will say with all due respect that downtown Bellevue is Bellevue's golden goose, and that the property taxes that are generated by downtown Bellevue and the retail sales taxes that are generated by downtown Bellevue comprise a significant bulk of our city's operating budget and the rest of it, and that the vitality and viability of downtown Bellevue is what allows the vast majority of the residents of Bellevue, especially living in single family neighborhoods, to pay like some of the lowest property taxes in the state of Washington, have some of the, I mean, it just, it goes around. We have a world-class city of about 150,000 people, because of downtown Bellevue, which is why getting this right is so important, which is not a flippant way of saying the downtown residents or people should just suck up taller buildings or shadowing and not having it livable, but believe me, not just the downtown residents, everybody in Bellevue is fortunate that we have downtown Bellevue for what it provides in terms of our police and fire and all of the other things that it pays for.
I hear you, but with all due respect, my question was with specifically to what we're talking about, the amenity incentive and the fee in you. Yes, I agree with everything else that you said, but my question is how do we make sure what we're trying to accomplish actually works?
So, and how I say the 25 versus 20, and maybe I'm oversimplifying and not grabbing your point, but the $25 on site versus 28, because it's do it now or do it later somewhere else. And so to me, there's more cost involved in do it later somewhere else. So that's the only thing I see that recognizes is, let's do it now. Let's do it here, so that there's transparency and comparability, and people who live around whatever is going up taller than they might have thought they liked. They're like, okay, we're going to see this is coming along with it, and doesn't get detached. And oh well, by the way, there's this thing over there that's going to be hit in 5 years. 5 years, you know. A lot can happen in 5 years. So that's why I support the 28 versus 25.
Okay. So am I hearing Commissioner Berkson?
I just have one basic question. So we were talking about the difference between like a fee in lieu and an impact fee. Can you just clarify what the difference is?
So the fee in lieu is actually participation in the amenity system.
Right.
But instead of building essentially the amenity, you're actually paying the fee in lieu for building that amenity, and it goes into a fund, and then we use that fund towards the amenities for which it was collected.
Right.
The impact fee is based more on, it's a construct of state law, and we collect currently transportation impact fees. Under state law, you're allowed to collect for transportation and parks and fire, I believe.
And schools.
And
yeah.
schools. Yeah. And we collect for schools on behalf of school districts in the area. And so you have to have a master plan, you have to have a capital facilities plan, you have to demonstrate where the facilities are that you're going to need, how those facilities are going to be charged, and then you essentially assign a component of obligation to the development community to support that build out the capital facilities plan. So it's both a kind of a joint contribution with the city contribution, the developer contribution. So it's a different funding strategy. It's relatively complex to set up. It's different than what we're talking about here. But
Commissioner Light?
I'm not articulating well, and I apologize. And I apologize if I was terse there.
I can handle you, Aaron.
I know, but you're in good company. I get that kind of from about most of this room. But I do believe in treating people respectfully. And if I wasn't, I'm sorry. So here's the thing. You know, in the Wallace letter, it says some projects have no choice but to pay the fee in lieu.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what my problem is that if we have a fee in lieu that's intentionally set higher than what the impact is, if you will, in order to encourage people to build it instead of pay it, but you have some folks that actually have no choice but to pay it because they literally don't have enough property in order to do it, then that's the problem here. So I guess I'm with Chair Walter, and I think everybody, you know, Commissioner Morrison made some good points about what's the unintended consequence or what's the loophole here or whatever. My concern is if it's $25, then just set it at $25. If it's $28, then set it at $28. But it shouldn't have a disparate impact on somebody just because they have a smaller property
And if it means that if you have a smaller property that your, I'll just make up a number, your $20 a foot solution that you can't do on your site becomes $28 a foot because you can't do it on the site, you've just paid $8 more for that same thing than the either the person next door that has a bigger property than you or whatever. That's my concern.
Okay, that being a fair point, is there any way staff can incorporate some language in there if we have a situation where that particular site cannot achieve this, then they can pay the 25?
Well, we talked about there are other approaches, and maybe it's not adjusting the cost, but maybe it's essentially another small site departure for sites that aren't able to actually place all the same percentage of amenities on the property because of its size. So we can look at it in relationship to the 40,000 square foot small site, which we have also, which there are other essential departures as well for small sites that we're building in. So I think when you see that all together, it probably will address the issue.
Okay. Because what I'm trying to avoid, I mean, looking at the system we have in place now, a lot of the amenities did not end up getting built on site.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to create another system that's going to have the same results, then what's the point of what we're doing here?
Why don't we come back with a recommendation on something that creates a departure in that area for the small site, together with the other ones. And instead of focusing on everything, focus it on the small site. Mm-hmm. We can do that.
I think that's a great suggestion.
Okay. I think with that, we have actually gone through the entire list of options, of direction and feedback that we've received from the Planning Commission. And I know since you did have a short comment period at the beginning of this session that there are probably people that would be interested in making public comment to the extent that they've stayed. So,
and that is great. And I want to thank you for your flexibility in sort of shifting things around to get to the meat of things quickly, early. And, you know, we got done earlier than we usually do, so maybe we should always do it. Okay, so next on the agenda, before Aaron decides to commandeer this meeting, as he's entitled to, or should be, let's go back to, minutes to be signed. Do we have minutes to review?
You have the minutes to be signed. You just have one set of minutes to be approved, which is April 19th.
Do we have to do it today?
Is it too late to amend the agenda to do it next time when we have a full complement of commissioners?
Yeah, we can do it at the next.
Do I need to take a motion? Okay.
No, I think you're fine. Just give direction, and we'll bring it back on the 24th.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, but I don't want to go any later than that, so I want a commitment.
Okay, now, let me just say, it might go after that if there's a lot of information happening in March 24th that has to, that kind of has a drop-dead thing. So
yeah,
I'll just kick it to Devidos and he'll...
I just want to be sensitive because this doesn't go up on the Internet. Mm-hmm. All they get is the audio recording. They do not get the minutes until you approve them.
And Mr. Cullen, I totally appreciate that. I'm just saying that reality is such that the March 20th and May 24th meeting could go very long, and if I had to pick a priority of that or the other, it would have to be completing the work of the 24th. That's all I'm saying.
Diligence to
I just don't want to make promises I can't keep. Thank you. All right, with that, we go back to the sign-up list for public comment. And we are on Mr. Organ, Ms. Organ?
Organ.
They left. Okay. John Hassan.
Hi, thank you for letting me talk. John Hassan. I live at 650 Bellevue Way over at the One Lincoln Tower. And I just wanted to bring up a little
consideration that we have the 425 Center Building and the Bellevue expansion coming basically online by the end of the summer. And it would be nice if we were to wait for those two, and yeah, those two huge buildings to get occupied, and so we could see what the actual real impact is going to be on the city for parking, for traffic, and for livability. And because I don't see that why there's such a hurry to get to this decision now, you know, by May 24th, when we can actually make a more informed decision maybe 6 months after the buildings have been built and occupied. So that's my only concern.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hassan. Kathy? Okay. And then Kathy and Rich Gary? Ian Morrison?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your deliberation. We'll hold off.
Okay. And then that is, we have one person, Eric Sin, not speaking about downtown livability.
Hello, everyone. I am here representing the Parks Board. My name is Eric Sin. I am in my current Parks Board member. My address is 10906 Northeast 39th Place, Bellevue 98004. First of all, it's wonderful seeing all of you again. I understand that right now it's a late time, so thank you for allowing me to speak.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
One second. If you want to check, can you take it in the hallway, please, or something? Thank you.
In basically recognition of the work that you've done, and basically to make sure that we are not a stopper within the process that's currently undergoing. Stuart Heath and the Park Board wanted to make sure that we actually tied off on one of the asks that was provided or given to us during our last Park Board meeting. There were two of them, and so just to give a backstory on one of them, the definition of open space, the Parks Board is still working diligently to actually have that defined and shared with the Planning Commission. However, there was a specific question given to us or presented to us on whether plazas would constitute open space. And the issue came about through basically...
Mr. Sin?
Yes.
Are you referring to definition of parks or open space?
We are referring to definition of... the one that we are still working on is open space.
Okay, thank you.
Correct. However, there was a specific ask on the term plazas. And that came about through basically the incentive system that we've just discussed in regards to the set percentage of a certain amount of square footage being allocated. And there were specific examples given where that particular incentive structure might not benefit the community or be sustainable to Bellevue. One of those examples is actually and that one that was shared last night at a Parks Board meeting, which is why I'm able to actually utilize it, is the open space or the little plaza that's behind Bakes Place in downtown Bellevue. It fits the requirements that basically were given. However, it presents or provides very little value to the community in regards to accessibility or visibility. It is a green space that needs to be approached by climbing a number of stairs. Basically, I believe that the only access points or one of the main access points are actually through the entrance of the building. And basically, that is one of the examples that was discussed yesterday. So in regards to making sure that we tied off on the ask that was given to us, the Parks Board made a recommendation that for a plaza to be considered open space, it should be publicly visible, accessible, publicly or privately owned land that operates or is available for leisure, play, or sport, or serves to protect or enhance a natural environment and is consistent with desired uses of the community. The park staff actually has this definition. I will make sure that it's actually conveyed to you. It was actually just submitted this afternoon. And so I am here just to share the definition, share the plan of action, and also if there are additional questions or additional ways that we can actually help support this process, I am here to actually note them and take them back to the Parks Board and work with them to make sure that we provide you an answer within expedited amount of time.
Okay.
So
I do have a question for you. I thought there was still an outstanding question on whether open space was a park or whether they were two separate. Did you come to a conclusion, or has it just been?
That is still under discussion. Primarily, there are a couple of components as well. It is not a subjective matter. There is a comprehensive parks and open space plan that Bellevue actually follows and is actually part of the long-term strategy on the sustainability of parks within Bellevue. However, within that particular plan, there is no set definition of open space. And so, unfortunately, it is somewhat of a roundabout situation that we find ourselves in, that we do need to define open space, or at least come up with a definition that is agreeable, and from there basically work to make sure that it impacts definitions of parks, definitions of plazas, and any other aspects of public space that will come into question.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much.
And with that, unless there's any... Oh, we have more people who'd like to speak.
Excellent.
I'll let you introduce yourselves. I know both of your names, but they're not coming to me. Do I write this on the sheet?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Hi, I'm Jeff Taylor with the Keldun Group, and I'm at 10400 4th Street, Suite 500.
All right. Larry Martin with Davis Wright Tremaine, 777 108th Avenue Northeast, Bellevue.
And Alex Smith, 700 112th LLC at 700 112th Avenue Northeast.
I'll start off. We were talking about floor plate sizes and the ideal office floor plate sizes, and I just wanted to, represent Alex Smith and 712th, and that's the OLB Central, where the floor plate sizes are, if reduced by 10%, would be reduced to 18,000 square feet. And the reason why an efficient office floor plate wants to be around 22,000 feet, 20 to 24,000 feet, it all has to do with distance from the core. So when you come up the elevator and you have your Z corridors for exiting, you want to be a certain distance from that, the interior side, the exterior side of that hallway to the window line. And that makes your space as efficient as can be going around the entire building. And that's how can you always see the most efficient office buildings across the country. And in answer to your question earlier, it's the same in San Francisco, Denver, Phoenix. I've developed in all those areas. You're always looking for that 20 to 24,000 square foot office floor plate, unless the current trend has been high-tech companies, and they want the bigger floor plates because they want to cram as many people in there as possible. But that's how come you see the different developers in these different districts saying, gosh, we don't mind being reduced a certain amount, but if we can keep a minimum size for office, because if we go below that amount, we become non-competitive with our competitors. And the competitors could be in a different city, could be Seattle, could be other zones in downtown Bellevue. The other thing I thought was a good idea here tonight was the flexible amenity. I think we've mentioned this in the past, that if one comes up with other amenities on their property that they can put towards the system, they should be looked at. I believe now it's still the case you have to go to the city council for an amenity. So let's say you come up with a neat amenity on site that may not be a big, big deal, but something that really makes sense. Not too many developers are going to go through the process of going to the city council, so they may drop the idea. So it'd be nice to see that staff had some flexibility, maybe it's a maximum number of points or something along those lines, where they can approve these sort of things. And that's it for me. Thank you.
I'm sorry, question?
I'll wait till after your talk.
Oh, okay. I wanted to talk about the what I find really confusing, and I'm encouraging you to think about it as you reach the end of the road here, and that's the ramification of the base height and the trigger height. And I'm looking at, for example, the dimensional standards chart that starts at page 42 in your book. And there's two columns there. They're identical in that for each zone, it sets up a base height, it sets up a trigger height. And the base height is, we think back to the FAR discussions you had and the changes you made. A property is not allowed to build beyond the base height unless it earns amenity points. The trigger height for each zone is actually the very same height, but it's a separate section in the code. You've addressed part of it by saying you no longer have to reduce your, I mean, you no longer have to provide 10% open space if you exceed that trigger height. But we still have in the code the reduction of the floor plate. And my point about both base height and trigger height, same number zone for any given zone, but different from zone to zone, is that complete arbitrariness and unfairness of how those numbers are different in each zone. For example, there's no ramification for base height or trigger height in 01 until you get to, 345 feet or 450 feet, depending on whether it's residential or non-residential. Whereas in Alex's property, the OLB Central, the trigger height and the base height both kick in at either 90 feet or 105 feet. So when you look at that same building, call it a 400-foot building, for the everything beyond 100 feet, for 300 feet of that building, Alex is going to have to pay the amenity tax by either building public amenities or paying a fee in lieu of or both. Whereas you can build a building in 01 and nothing happens until you go beyond 450 feet. And there's differences. You go to 02 and you're talking 288 feet. And you're talking MU, it's a different number. So what I'm suggesting is you really need to make the same correction that you made for FAR, i.e., all of the triggers for FAR, the base FAR, is going to be set at 90% of the new maximum FAR for each zone. And I'm suggesting you need to fix the second half of the problem by doing the same thing with, and this time it's two columns, same number, base FAR, base height and trigger height, each should be set at 90% of the new maximum height for the zone. What you will again have gone a long way towards curing the problems I've been complaining about all along, which is that this is really a tax on development, because where OLB gets a big increase of development, they end up paying a lot of amenities disproportionate to other zones where they didn't get as much increase in development capacity, but they actually can build bigger buildings. So it has nothing to do with impacts. It's all based on how much additional development capacity you're getting, and that takes you right squarely into the illegal zone. But forget the illegal for a minute. It's just not fair, because it has nothing to do with impacts, and it has, you know, just... So anyway, if you make that adjustment, then you can continue to talk about, is a 10% reduction in floor plate still make sense? You know, are the amenities the right ones? But at least people will be starting from a place that is relatively proportional to their maximum in the zone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess my only contribution is Larry's argument, as was summarized in our prior submissions to the Planning Commission, and we still have copies. It's just one small paragraph, but it's essentially just the 90% of the new max. And then in closing, this may be our last chance to address everyone again. Thank you for your dedication. I'm looking forward to the 24th. I don't know if we're going to meet on the 17th. Maybe we get a bigger room for the 24th. It seems like it'll be sold out. And look forward to seeing of that?
I just had a quick question. You mentioned that developers won't go to City Council for the flexible amenity. Why not?
Well, the assumption, which is always bad to assume, but the assumption, the presumption on that is that it would take a long time and be very expensive to put together a package, and when would that occur? Is it, you know, is it at the very beginning of the process or some way through it? But it's maybe that assumption's wrong, but the thinking is that it'd take a lot and take a lot of time to get the meeting set with the City Council and go present it and wait for their decision, whatever that process takes. That's the only reason. And I think the City Council probably has better things to do than decide whether or not some minor amenity in a project should be part of the bonus system than not. You know, that's something the staff should be able to, in my opinion anyway, the staff should be able to handle. And I think you'd easily do that, just do it, you know, a maximum number of points. You know, it's come up with a number that makes sense.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And with that,
I move that we adjourn.
So, second.
Wow. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Is it just the one here, or do we have problems?
It's just enough.
Okay. I will leave them a copy. Thank you.